Hey, Jan, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, John.
None of my controls seems to be working anymore. My recording can't. I was going to shut that off because there was so much dead spot. See if you could shut up the recording right now.
Okay. I can't. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
You can? Because I couldn't hear anybody.
No, I can't hear you, Gerard.
Okay,
no, I can't hear you, Gerard. Which song do you want, John?
Well, right now, I don't know whether the recording's on. I'm going to bail out of here and come back and just shut the recording off, and it's going to have to...
Takes a while to load, huh?
Well, that's what happened to me. It froze up.
Yeah, it just went gray.
All right. Yeah, we might as well just go forward without it. Okay. You might want to go in and, you know, go out and come back in. I don't know. Because I don't know if that's going to kick in at some point. And there's no way to clear off your thing.
So, okay.
All right. We're recording right now, right?
Right.
Okay. So we'll get started. Okay. Welcome to everyone to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 29th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over another network or you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250. And our participant code is 449389. If anyone would like to email us a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. Okay, tonight's scripture reading is Matthew chapter 20, verses chapter 9, verses 20 through 31. So Matthew chapter 9, verses 20 through 21. Let me go back to 18. Let's start in 18. This is just a couple of verses before that. Okay, so chapter 9, verses 18 through 31. While he spake these things unto them, behold, there came a certain ruler and worshipped him, saying, My daughter is even now dead, but come and lay thy hands upon her, and she shall live. And Jesus arose and followed him, and so did his disciples. And behold, a woman, which was diseased with an issue of blood 12 years, came behind him and touched the hem of his garment. For she said within herself, If I may but just touch his garment, I shall be whole. But Jesus turned him about, and when he saw her, he said, Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. And the woman was made whole from that hour. And when Jesus came unto the ruler's house and saw the minstrels and the people making a noise, he said unto them, Give place, for the maid is not dead, but sleepeth. And they laughed him to scorn. But when the people were put forth, he went in and took her by the hand, and the maid arose. And the fame hereof went abroad unto all the land. And when Jesus departed thence, two blind men followed him, crying and saying, Thou son of David, have mercy on us. And when he was come unto the house, the blind men came to him, and Jesus saith unto them, Believe ye that I am able to do this? And they said unto him, Yea, Lord. Then touched he their eyes, saying, According to your faith be it unto you. And their eyes were opened, and Jesus straightly charged them, saying, See that no man knoweth it. But when they were departed, spread abroad his fame in all the country. Okay, that was Matthew chapter 9, verses 18 through 31. Okay, we don't particularly have a topic tonight, and... There's not all that many people in the room tonight. So what we're going to do is just go straight on to open forum. First, are there any questions that come through the email here, Jen?
Yeah, well, we have several. The first one's about quasi-judicial. Quasi in Latin for as if, in some sense resembling or nearly judicial, means in court proceedings. Now, municipal corporations use this process all the time. Looks like they act in a private corporation capacity, and the Constitution doesn't quite agree with that. Can a magistrate in such cases assess a monetary fine? And if so, what is the best remedy?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Can a magistrate do what? Make a fine?
Well, under quasi-judicial whatever, can a magistrate
assess
a monetary fine?
Yeah, let's go straight to, first of all, there's not a judge or a magistrate that has the power or the authority to fine or even charge anyone, fine or incarcerate. That's what it is. They cannot fine, they cannot incarcerate. Only a court of record could do that, which requires a jury. A jury can fine and a jury can incarcerate. But a judge cannot. Now, I know they do it all the time, but they don't have the power or the authority to do that. And we've become grown used to a lot of these things as if they're regular or normal. But just think about it, you know. If there is a crime that there may be some kind of a fine or an incarceration applied to someone, due process has to be taken place, but in order for anything criminal to happen, they have to be indicted by a grand jury. And at that point, now it becomes a criminal proceeding. No judge can hear a criminal proceeding, period, end of subject, as far as common law is concerned, as far as American law is concerned. You know, when you read the Constitution, it talks about the authority and the power of the court system. And it talks about in law and also talks about, what's the other word which deals with contracts? Equity. Equity and in law. And anything, so judges are able to make judgments in any case in equity, okay, which would usually be a contract disagreement or something of that nature. He said, she said, they got an argument, and he settles it. Now, if it's over $20, the Constitution permits for the people and one of the persons or both to request a trial by jury, and if they want that, then they get a trial by jury for an equity case. If we had honest judges, if we had just judges, if we had judges that wasn't serving the New World Order or corporate America or the special interest groups, because that's who they serve, one of those three groups, generally speaking, all together, but that's who they do serve. If they're not making a decision actually in justice, they're really concerned and listening to the argument and making a just decision, well, we wouldn't mind a judge making a decision in equity cases. And we do, of course, if he makes an error or she makes an error, we have the option to go for, an appeal. There's an appellate process. So there's that could work out very well. If we had honest judges, I believe they're all corrupt. I don't think any of them are honest. I think every single one of them at this point is corrupt. I mean, it's a big statement to say all of them are. Maybe there is one or two here or there. I haven't found them. They don't seem to be interested in doing the just thing. They're interested in serving their masters. I don't know. I guess I answered that question. You know, again, back to any kind of a criminal case. Look at it. If you're going to be fined for something, obviously there's some kind of criminal violation or something, I would imagine. Look at it. You can't get a code violation because codes don't apply to us. So I don't know under what circumstances a fine might come up. But clearly incarceration can only be done by a trial by jury. That's the law. All right. Anything else there, Jen?
Yes, I have two more. The next one was brought up by Robert Overhill some time ago, maybe a year ago, and he talked about the fact that attorneys should file as foreign agents. Now, the question is, does anyone know what attorneys need to file in court via federal regulations to establish themselves under Title 22 USC subsection 611? They should be registered as foreign agents. And what else must they file in court before being able to practice law? Kind of two questions.
Well, yeah, I don't know anything about those things particularly. I mean, apparently there is some kind of a code there. But again, you know, you're saying that the Bar Association is a foreign agency, which I would agree with. There is the American Bar Association. But nevertheless, it's still, in my opinion, under the bar ultimately, and that bar, in my opinion, strong opinion, really, you know, if you go to a bar school, they're really teaching them how to really preserve the status quo. They seem to veer them away from the Constitution. They never really get to that, and they're taught. You know, all of these statutory things as if they are law. And they're actually taught and to ignore the Constitution and not even bring it up. I remember when we were learning how to figure things out, we had a lawyer help us out. And he was taught in law school that, you know, there's no need to really bring up the Constitution. There's plenty of statutes that make it very clear. Why get lost in trying to interpret the Constitution? And generally that was, and I guess that's in all schools that are controlled by the bar. Now, I'm sure there may be some schools that are not bar controlled. I don't know where that we might find them. I know Brent has made a certain argument concerning those things. You know, I wouldn't worry too much about that. What I would worry about is ultimately bringing back the proper jurisdiction. Now, we go into courts of records, which requires juries. We go into courts of justice, which requires the law and the law of the land. And that's what we should be concerned about. And if we can bring these courts back to courts of justice and out of the statutory realms, all of these lawyers would just be leaving their profession to just come in and, you know, as far as a bar-connected lawyer, they would just practice as anyone else would practice, and we'd have the common law back in place. And so to try to defeat a problem that'll take care of itself, you know, I wouldn't get too lost in that. Again, in my opinion, a very strong opinion, it's always about two things, due process and jurisdiction. Make sure you get in due process. Make sure you're in a proper jurisdiction. And you will find that all these courts, every court that we've walked into is jurisdictions unknown. I mean, these people make the wackiest decisions. I mean, way, way to the left field. And constantly, injuring the people coming into that courtroom. So whatever jurisdiction they're in, some people think that they can tell, but they change like the weather. And they'll even take their own rules and statutes and ignore them and change the meaning of them or whatever it is. Again, the best way to describe these, in my opinion, is jurisdictions unknown because they change like the weather. But we need the Constitution to be applied. We need the law of the land to be applied, especially in a criminal case. We want to make sure that there is an untainted grand jury and an untainted trial jury. And of course, those things are very difficult to find. I don't know that we can anymore. And again, that's why we have opened our case up to do something very, unusual, extraordinary. We're trying to stay as close to the process as we can. We're trying to stay, to look as close to the process and the procedures of the court as we can. within reason. But extraordinary, you know, circumstances requires extraordinary responses. And so that's where we're at. And so we have a lot of logic, but we also use a lot of existing Supreme Court decisions to use that to hopefully coax and get the judges or others in the courtroom to realize that we are operating under the process of law and the decisions of the United States Supreme Court. There's a lot of good decisions that they've made. We can use them. But bringing the courts to a proper jurisdiction we've been unable to do that. But I think in the court case we have now, I think that's where we're going to accomplish this. And right now, things have been going pretty good. This judge has been very, very quiet as a mouse. We're about ready now to make some motions to push this judge to do his administrative duty. We'll talk about that maybe next week. I got to go through all the paperwork and see where we're at with these things, and then we're going to talk about these things. But we're also putting in, many, many different court cases, and as everybody knows, we've also sent a copy of our case and wrote a letter to the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions. We haven't heard back from him yet. We'll give him a little more time. President has been out of town, so he just got back, so... You know, we also copied him on this, so we'll give them a little time. But then we're going to start moving towards the show cause why he is not moving forward. We're reporting crimes to him. We've even recorded, reported murder to him, and he's not responding. You know, he has a duty. We want him to show cause now. That, I think, is where we're going to be moving. But first, I think we'll do a... I'm not sure. We'll probably do something, a letter to him first, give him a little more time, but not too much more time, and then we're going to push him. So what we're doing is we've opened a case which is really, court of record. We're going to bring in, juries, trial juries for each one of these cases. And the ultimate thing is, of course, this is subversion against the United States of America by enemies both foreign and domestic. The judiciary is just, subversive in everything they're doing. So we need to go up against the judiciary as a whole, I think, at some point. But certainly we've got lots of judges that we can show have not been doing their duty and have been ignoring due process, and we can prove each one of these cases. And we'll see how that goes, how it moves along. Now, of course, this is a little bit unorthodox. It's never been done this way before. But we have no other choice. We have to bring lots and lots of cases together to bear in one place. And then we have to push them hard, push forward with these, and start going after everybody. All this proves conspiracy. All this proves is subversion. Putting all these cases together shows how corrupt the whole system is, how corrupt the judiciary is. And so that's why we're doing it the way we're doing it anyway. But, to go after a statute or something, talks about the bar attorney having to do this or to do that. We're just wasting our time. And who are you going to bring it up to? The corrupt judge? You think the corrupt judge is going to hear that? I remember when we went into the federal court and we showed proof and made the point concerning that the IRS was a private corporation. It was not a government entity. And the judge was very clear. He didn't want to hear that no more. Let's move on, So we knew there was a problem there. In this case, we did end up winning anyway. But the next time something like that would happen, I wouldn't say anything in the court. We'd do a writ of error after we leave the court and immediately move that judge over to become a defendant and a subversive. Because that's what they are. Anyway, I don't know if anybody else wants to pipe in there, Gerard or Brent. But if not, is there another question?
Yes, I have one that's got a short first and a long second question. The first one talks about the document 1004, which is the Statement of Jurisdiction.
Right.
And it says in footnote number one, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is comprised of the grand juries from all 50 states. And it says, but there are 25 members you recognize at headquarters as the members of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. Is that right?
No. The Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is made up of everyone that attends when we call forth the jury. And usually we haven't done it in a while, but when we did do it, we had quite a few hundreds of people that would show up and to participate in that. So it's up to, you know, as many people, potentially we can have 6,000 people because we have over 6,000 members. Of course, I doubt we'd ever have that many come together at one time. But, you know, as many people would come, minimum would be 25. Each state has well over 25 members. So, and again, organizing the grand juries was really a way to logically come up with the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which really, in generally speaking, shouldn't exist. But again, extraordinary times brings forth extraordinary measures. Look, at we're up against subversion against the United States of America, okay, by enemies both foreign and domestic. We're talking about every single court. We have communicated with all 94 federal district courts, and they have never communicated back to us. We filed all kinds of papers, done all kinds of things, and they just totally ignore us. And their actions and the things that they do, you know, covering up papers or removing them from files, I mean, it's like the right hand and the left hand know exactly what they're doing. That proves conspiracy because they're all doing the same thing. They're all responding in the same way, okay? And so that in itself shows that there is a problem. And our intention for bringing together Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is solely for the purpose of dealing with subversion, to work to bring the federal district courts back under the law. I mean, that's what we're trying to do. And again, it's an extraordinary action. It's never been done before, but it seems logical. And you know, look at, we had to build up a large membership in order to come to where we are today. We did that. We had to keep people busy so they would continue coming. So that's why we went around and did those things in the counties, you know, reorganizing and reconstituting the grand jury in each county just by coming together, talking about it, letting the people vote. It's almost always unanimous. I mean, once in a while you get a problem person come in and say no, but one doesn't matter. In any event, we did that across the entire United States. We then organized, meanwhile, organizing the counties. We ended up organizing the states, and we got all of the states to organize themselves as a common law grand jury within the state, get seals and everything else and an address and so on. But they are not to be active. They were really brought together to bring one grand jury as the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. Again, it was a logical way to approach it. It kept us busy over time, got people involved and active. We created committees. We educated people. We got courses going and people involved. And so all of that time, okay, it took, what, 4 years or 5 years, however long we've been doing this, to get to that point, to get into the federal courts, which, why, by the way, we're exactly where we wanted to be, where we planned to be, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when we started this thing. Our focus, well, at first we thought we'd be able to do it at the state level, but we learned very quickly that's not going to happen. When we realized it's going to be the federal level that we're going to win it at. And we only have to win it in one federal court. And we realized that we had to bring all these cases together because it's so easy for these guys to throw one case out to come in and take control and do this or do that. But how are they going to throw out 100 cases? How are they going to throw out 500 cases? Our potential of 1,000 cases is not ridiculous. It's very, very possible because we're out there bringing in a lot of cases. We're well over 100 cases. And so, you know, all of this, again, all of this is to prove conspiracy to go up against the judiciary and to bring the court, you know, the court of law back, to bring justice back into our courts. And again, you know, if we can get a United States Attorney General that is interested in justice, that is interested in bringing the law back and isn't one of the pawns, which I believe this guy is, my opinion. He doesn't seem to be anything remarkable. He's just, another bar taught lawyer. And he may surprise us. I don't think he's going to. We're going to expect that the president is going to fire him. Look at he hired him. He can fire him. If he doesn't do his duty, it's the duty of the president to make sure he's fired. And we've spent a lot of time educating this president. He's read, we believe he has read all of our paperwork. And our paperwork was written with the intention to teach. We've got a lot of memorandums which defined every aspect of the case. As far as process and procedure and how we're going forward and who we are, how we got here, and so on and so forth. The logic of everything we're doing, it explains it all. And that's where we're going. So if Sessions doesn't respond properly, we're going to go after him too. We're going to do do a show cause on why he's not, doing his duty. And we'll copy the president. And we're going to push the president to do something about this. It's his job and it's his duty. So that's kind of where we're at with that. But in any event, going back to the original part of this question, the lawyer thing, the bar thing with the code, I wouldn't get involved with that. It's just something to waste our time because it's not going to prove anything. You're not going to benefit from it. Nobody's going to respond to you anyway in the courts. They'll ignore you and move on. Anything else, Jen?
Yes, there's a part two referring to the same document, 1004, Statement of Jurisdiction. To the right, at the top, you have Sureties of the Peace. And then also Sovereigns of the Court, and that's situated above We the People. I guess my question is, will the individual people be losing the ability to go to court for a redress if the Sureties of the Peace and the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury take the, then let it be decided by the 5 and 20, we will immediately grant full justice therein, Well, what control would a person have over his own personal grievance? Can he take that to a court of law in his state? And particularly since there is a mention of extending the olive branch elsewhere, you can't possibly address all the cases because there are thousands, but I want to make certain that I would not lose my opportunity to take action in my own right. They are doing terrible things all over, and I am so far virulently powerless. It seems to redress at this time or even learn about the proceedings held against me and the most cruel psychops. I would prefer to have some discretion about the arrangements made myself and not leave it to some people. And I think well of NLA, who might have things to gain by giving an easy hand to the perps. Are you taking over the proceedings like barons over serfs? I guess you get my drift. And a simple assurance to a more just judicial system is supposed to be my satisfaction and reward? Question. That's a mouthful. Do you want to address that whole list?
Yeah, well, look, generally speaking, again, let's get back to the purpose of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. Somewhere, somehow, someplace, in one place, it has to be dealt with the subversion. Subversion must be dealt with. And you can't. And all these cases that we're taking on, specific kinds of cases we're taking on, proves the subversion. And so we're consolidating a lot of different cases, criminal cases particularly, of course. We're consolidating all these cases which help to make the point and prove the point. And we're going to, the judges themselves, really, we're going after the judges is what we are doing. But we've got at least 30, 35 judges that we're going after in these cases. because they're the ones responsible for the subversion. They're the ones responsible for taking away us into jurisdictions unknown. They're the ones responsible who are not doing their duty and honoring their oath and giving the people their due process. So they're the ones responsible. And those are the people we're going after. But not just them. There are others involved. But basically, it's the judiciary. Now, as far, and remember, we're talking about hitting, you know, we're going up against the giant here. And so we have to come together as a people from across the nation in every state and many, many counties coming together to do this thing collectively as one. And so, yeah, we are the sureties of peace. Now, we reference to the sureties of peace, the 25 and so on and so forth. That all goes back, of course, you know,
Magna Carta.
Thank you. Magna Carta. Goes back to the Magna Carta. That's where the language comes from. We're also, there's a second part of this, which a listener or member is really missing, and that is the work we're doing is creating the administrations. We're trying to create administrations for individuals minimum in every county across America. We have right now, I think it's, last time I looked, I think it was 1,004 administrators that have signed up. People have signed up for, become administrators. And those four individuals, those administrators for each county, would be responsible for calling the grand jury. When a court requests the grand jury, they will be there. And it doesn't matter who pulls them in. The courts can, you know, make the phone calls and have them come in. But they don't get to talk to them. We, the people, have to talk with them. We have to, you know, orientate them, whether it's a grand jury or a trial jury that's being brought together in that county, and make sure that they're not tainted, and give them the necessary tools that they need. You know, we can get a day with them, 8 hours, and in 8 hours we can give them a lot of information. We can talk about nullification. We could talk about what real law is. We could talk about what the United States Supreme Court has ruled on many occasions concerning jurisdiction, concerning the law itself, and the difference between statutes and law. And so we have 8 hours to educate them, and they need to come, of course, the basics is to come with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And that's how these juries need to be pulled together. Apparently, we can't allow the prosecutors. I mean, that's insane to allow prosecutors to pull together the jury. It's insane to allow the judge to talk to these juries. It's just totally insane. Because they're political animals, and they're going to serve themselves, and they're going to protect themselves, and we've got a mess because that's what we had. And so we've got to take it away from them and bring it that way. So that's the second part of this whole thing. We have no intentions of trying to – how could any group try to hear all cases and get all the juries together and all the grand jury? You can't. That has to be done locally. And so we're building the administrations locally. Meanwhile, the case that we're fighting is subversion against the United States. That's the case we're focused in on. And once we break through and start getting indictments and start putting some of these people in jail and get these people starting fleeing, then that's when we're going to be able to empower the administrators and bring them up into the counties. You know, the state courts is a no-brainer on this one once you win the federal courts. Because they have to adhere to the Constitution. They can't bring all these puppet juries together. They're doing the same thing the federal judges are doing. They're serving, you know, again, the New World Order, corporate America, and special interest groups. That's who they're serving, and themselves. That's who they're serving. It's the same whether on a state level or on a federal level, you know. And as far as these statutory courts, you know, those who rule just on codes and code violations, I mean, they're just going to disappear because they have to. You can't force people to be obedient to statutes and fine them or incarcerate them when they break those statutes. They're not held under statutes. You know, codes and all this stuff, statutes, and this is all made for really the bureaucrats to control themselves. You know, it's like really like policies and procedures, so to speak. You know, you get the right, the necessary controls, you know, whatever codes you want to write. But that has nothing to do with the people. You can't control their behavior. But anyway, going back to the point we were talking about, we have no intentions, nor can we possibly, you know, one grand jury or one group of people rule in that's a misunderstanding of what we're doing, that's all. Again, we're just dealing with subversion, breaking into the courts to bring justice back in, and then bringing the power to the people through the administrators, who will then empower the people on the county level and call together their grand juries when necessary and call together their trial juries when necessary and orientate them in what justice is. And that's when our courts will then, at least on the criminal side of things, start working well. And look at on the other side of things, on the equity side, where the judges are making a lot of these decisions, which is where they should be making their decisions, they need to be doing it according to American jurisprudence. They need to be doing it according to the law. And they're not there to interpret anything. They're there to apply the law. And really, you know, most of these cases, the general law really is minimum in a court case. Ultimately, it's all about the facts. Who did what to who? Who got injured? And what are we going to do to fix it? I mean, really, that's what the court case is and should be about. Unfortunately, you know, all of these loopholes and statutes and, you know, strategies and all this stuff has nothing to do with justice. It has to do with corruption. And so really, you know, a court of justice is to decide on the facts of the case and make things right. That's what it's about. So hopefully that individual understands better what we're doing. And now the sureties of the peace, you know, and we're coming in as the people. For the first time, we the people are coming into the courts. Because look at the state and the government. The federal government comes in the United States versus whoever, you know. The states come in the people versus whoever. But it's really them in the name of us. It's them using our name and taking us into jurisdiction, these people into jurisdictions unknown, and applying injustice to these people in the name of, in our good name, in the name of the people. We, for the first time, are coming in the name of the people, we the people. And all of the courts that are controlled by the people will continue to come in the name of we the people, and will continue to be the sureties of peace ultimately. Now, remember, the sureties of peace really, in our case, is the grand jury, which is the grand jury. That's what the sureties of peace is. All grand juries would become the sureties of the peace. It's up to them to make sure that injustice does not go uncorrected. It's up to them to make sure that if people are injured, that they're repaired somehow. And it's up to the grand jury, you know, if it's not violent or anything, you know, it's up to the grand, they can fix the problem and not even send it into the court if they can get the person that was injured and the person that injured that person to work out something that's reasonable to restore that person to their original state. And, of course, if they can't, then they have a duty to send it into the court and let the trial jury decide on how this is going to, what it's going to be done and how they're going to restore this individual and so on. That's justice, and that's what our court should be about. So, anyway, I guess that's the best I could do on that. Anything else, Jan?
No, that's all the questions that I had for this week.
All right. Okay, tonight we're just going to go right into open forum. I see that Brent is here. Brent, you're welcome to respond to anything we're talking about, you know, if you want to voice your opinion or if someone asks you something directly. So we're just going to go into Gerard. Do you have anything particular or short you want to share?
I just real quick, I want to reinforce some of the stuff you said with the juries and the grand juries. When we talk to the juries, one of the biggest things we'll teach them is nullification. And the other ones that are going to fall in our crosshairs are not just the judges, but these prosecutors, who in some cases are more evil than the judges, are going to have to answer for the things that they do. So it's the prosecutors that are standing in the way in a lot of the cases, and besides the judges. So they're both in our crosshairs. And the big, big thing is nullification. You know, you got to vote your conscience if the law is being misapplied or misinterpreted or whatever. The jury is supposed to fix that. They're the arbiters of the law. They make the law. So nullification should be a very easy idea to teach these people in an hour. You know what I mean? And if we keep the judge and the prosecutor away from them, we'll be just fine. All right, I rest.
Okay. Yeah, they're focused in on the facts. Because all cases are really about the facts. I mean, that's what it's really about. We're not interested in loopholes or any of that garbage. Brent, before we get started, anything you want to share or take a few minutes to say anything or respond to anything we've been talking about?
He's got to find his mute button. He loses it sometimes. He's working on it, though, I can tell. You know, you just gutted a big part of
I'm looking for him, trying to find him. Huh?
You just gutted a big part of their income. See, they like that plea bargaining and all that stuff. That's where they make their money. You know, they don't. The reason they're not doing the right thing is because they can't steal and human traffic and everything by following the Constitution, can they? If they're fixing things, they're not making the money that they have their heart set on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking for Jan. I'm not seeing him here. Maybe he dialed in as a.
No, I'm here.
No,
I don't see Brent.
He was here.
I saw him before. Yeah.
Yeah, he was here earlier, but I don't see him now.
All right, keep looking through. If you see him, unmute him. Okay. Maybe he dialed in on the wrong number. I don't know. But anyway, we're going to go right to open forum tonight. And anybody, any questions or comments? Now is the time. Star six. What is it? Star six to get into the queue, right?
Plus one.
Yeah, then it'll tell you to do one, right?
I don't know if it tells you, but you have to do the one after the star six.
Okay, anyway, let's take our first question. Let's see. It looks like Ed from Oklahoma. Go right ahead, Ed. You got the mic.
Hi, how you doing? This is Ed from Duncan, Oklahoma.
Yep.
You can hear me?
We can hear you. Go right ahead.
Awesome. I've been a member of you guys since last year. I've been away for about 6 months, though, for personal issues, which I regret. But anyway, in the time I've been off, I've been doing some more research and stuff like that. And my question, it's actually two questions. The first question is, I need your input in whether or not this particular research that I found is truth, okay? And what it's about the Act of 1871, in where supposedly the United States became incorporated. And at that point, we with the 14th Amendment in place, we, the persons or citizens, became subjects to those corporations.
Let me just respond pretty quickly to that, because you don't have to get too far into it. Yeah, that's the Organic Act of 1871, which I think, it all started way, way back. I mean, the Judiciary Act of 1789, they already had some problems already put into process to the, by the legislature. And some of that was corrected ultimately in 1801. Goodness, what's the name of that court case? Why can't I think of it? 1801 or 1803, I'm not sure. I think it was 1801.
Boston.
Huh?
Marbury
versus Madison, yeah. Is that kind of corrected some problems and made some clear statements in there concerning nullification, as far as null and void is concerned? Anything that is contrary to the Constitution or repugnant to the Constitution is null and void, period. And as far as we're concerned, the best way to use any kind of a ruler on anything that is written through legislation or any interpretation of concerning what the Constitution has to say is using the Bill of Rights. Because if it in any way injures those list of unalienable rights there in the Bill of Rights, And we have more rights than that, of course, but generally speaking, that's a primary, really a primary set of rights that really seem to do a very well job, a very good job, and you use that as a ruler up against any interpretation or any legislation, and you can render anything null and void because if it violates that right. Now, in 1871, by the Organic Act, that is true, where they kind of created this this municipality process, and they've added to it over the years. You know, that was part of the plan, continue constructing this this crazy jurisdiction that they've created. But all of that is subversion. It's contrary to the Constitution. It's repugnant to the Constitution. Therefore, it's null and void. Only God and the people can make law. Okay, that's the way our system was set up. We are a republic under a constitution by the people. That's the key. You see, not a constitution by the government, a constitution by the people. We,
absolutely,
the people, ordained and established this constitution for the United States of America. Now that's a key point. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So now God's law is natural law. And we're all under that law, and that's what we expect our courts to run under the law of the land, under God's law, ultimately. And
right.
Now, when it comes to, you know, any rights being violated, we apply the Bill of Rights. But generally speaking, you know, we the people wrote the law to control the government. You know, we wrote the Constitution. In Article 1, you know, we've laid out the legislative powers. In Article 2, we've laid out the administrative powers. And in Article 3, we laid out the judicial powers. Okay, those three particular articles, we laid out the powers of our government, what they can do, what kind of laws that they can make. Now, they write statutes, but as long as they're not repugnant to the Constitution, those statutes are law. They are making law. But remember, their law is really written to control themselves or to control certain aspects of our nation, you know, like, for instance, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Business between the states. What am I looking for?
What are you trying to say?
Commerce.
Business between the state. Commerce.
Commerce, yes.
Right. Now, they have certain powers and authority, and they've abused that too, okay, you know. But, they, again, that we've given them powers. If you go through Article 1, you can find, I think it's in Section 8 or 9, I forget
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it
I
lists out the powers
right.
of Congress. As long as, now, they can't go beyond that, so they can't write statutes against we the people. We didn't give them power or authority to control our behavior. We didn't give them the power or authority to create a municipality that would take control of Washington, D.C., and become a nation within a nation, and to go through all that insane things and to enslave us and so on and
right.
so forth. And they do interpret the certain amendments in a certain way. You know, again, it's all subversion. It has no power, no authority. And here is the other key. Remember, when the Declaration of Independence was declared, okay, and written, we ultimately called upon God, okay, to put ourselves under God, okay? The laws of nature and of nature's God. That's where we placed
right.
ourselves. And then
right.
we the people, once we won our independence from England, we the people wrote the Constitution, okay? And we gave the power, we gave certain powers to the three branches, okay? And of course we wrote the Bill of Rights, and all of everything is to be interpreted under the veil of the Bill of Rights. In any way, shape, or form, if it violates the Bill of Rights, it's null and void, can't be done. So all of that was fraud. It's fraud the day they did it. It's fraud yesterday. It's fraud today. And it's fraud tomorrow. And these people
right.
need to go to jail. So we give no adherence to it. We don't go into the courts and click our heels and say certain words, and magically they're going to say, oh, we have to listen to these people now, because that's not going to happen.
Okay, so my next question is, because you're confirming everything I researched and I know, okay? So my next question, some of the research I found out is, and this would be, you know, if we go back to the Declaration of Independence, you know, 56 men got together and declared the independence, and then, of course, the colonies followed their lead, and they created their liberty, okay? And some of the stuff I've researched in regards to what's going on, and hey, I'm honoring National Liberty Alliance. I mean, I love what we're doing, and I actually signed up to be an administrator. I'm a county. I'm part of my, you know,
organizer. Yep.
Yeah, and so you know, I'm really into this. Okay, but one of the things I learned, and I thought it was really fascinating and real powerful, and I just want your opinion on it. Okay. Now, there's a couple of people who have different ways of doing this, but what it is a basic. It's almost like a personal declaration of independence from the system. In other words, if we want to win on a personal level first, like if 325 million of us declared personal independence and didn't play their game, we suddenly are not in that game, so we're not subject to that jurisdiction, and we have our own standing with our own jurisdiction, which is common law. And apparently, and like I said, I don't know if this is truth or, and I'm just meaning maybe if you don't know about it, maybe you can research it, but it's called like you fill out certain types of paper, like an affidavit of reservation of rights, UCC 1-308, which is reservation of life, and you submit that to your county clerk's office, you make copies up of original copies, then you send it to the Secretary of State where you were born and where you're residing right now. And then what you do is you send that.
Yeah, none of that's going to do anything for you. The only thing that's going to do is you put you on a list of the first to be picked up when they finally come out, like the Nazis did to take you. I mean, that's all you're doing there. Because they don't care about any of that. It doesn't mean anything to them. You can bring that up in court. They laugh at you on that. You know,
okay.
All we're doing is chasing our tails is all we're doing in that stuff. Look at the bottom line is these people are guilty of subversion. And when you go into a courtroom, ultimately you're looking to get justice. We used to waste a lot of time coming back to the hearings, We don't do that no more. I mean, we haven't been really going into courts that much lately for quite a while now anyway. But of course, we are now in this one case. But the bottom line is you go into the court, as soon as you discover they're in jurisdictions unknown, you make the correction, you pull the court back to where they belong, they're not going to go there, and then you have to make a federal case out of it. That's the only way you're going to win in any kind of a lower court, you know, as far as a state court, county court, or any of those other courts. You got to make a federal case about it. What's the cause of action for cause? You know, you got to move it into a federal court for cause. Well, the cause is that they're violating your right of due process. They're not giving you a due process. They're also violating your right of having a court of justice in jurisdictions known. In other words, jurisdictions under the Constitution. And none of those things are there. So right there is your cause. You move right in, and then you take it into a federal judge. That a federal judge should have enough common sense to realize if you're going to take a judge and a prosecutor and everyone else involved in the case and bring them up into a federal court and charges against them, he's got to realize you're going to do the same thing with him, okay?
Right, okay.
And if you handle yourself well, you know, we've done this in a couple of cases, if you handle yourself well and you got the right thing going on and the judge realized what's going on, he's going to kind of go around the back and talk to these people and tell them, make a deal and make things right, because, you know, now my head is in trouble.
Correct me if I'm trying to understand. So are you saying that if you happen to be or get brought into court, you need to establish your own jurisdiction, like, and expose theirs? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, you look at it. You're not going – look at – they're in jurisdictions unknown, right?
Okay.
I mean,
yes.
You have no idea what jurisdiction you're in. We may think we know, but we don't know. As the court case goes, you start to see, well, it's here. No, it's there.
Right.
It's all over the place. And they make it up as
okay.
they go. It's totally making
right.
it up. Everything they change the meanings of is. They change the meanings of words. They change the meanings of the law.
Right.
They apply what laws they want to apply. I mean, it's just such a mess. It's
right,
just
right.
a mess everywhere you go. So obviously,
gotcha.
You're not going to get any justice there, right? So where
right.
can you go? You can only do one thing, and that is to go up. And where is up? Up is to the federal courts. You can't take it to any other state court because they're all working with each other, you know, washing each other's back, sort of scratching each other's back, you know. You're not
okay.
going to get anywhere there. So you go right up to the federal courts. Now, the federal judge, you know, you're bringing it in for cause, and again, he's seeing that you're going after everybody, okay?
Right.
He sees that you recognize what jurisdiction is.
Right.
And then you're going to hope that he's going to do the right thing. And I got to believe in most cases they're going to do, because these guys are not dumb. They won't make a ruling against these people. But they will work things out, you know, in the back rooms. You know what I'm saying? Because they
right,
always work
right.
it out in the back rooms. It really
right.
is so annoying. I mean, you know, you look at these cases, some of these cases, especially equity cases, okay, especially equity cases, okay, they go on for years and years. You know, 10 years in court for what the hell is all that about? It's all about
right.
lawyers making money is what it is. That's what it's about.
Right.
There's no reason for an equity case to be going to. Look at most court cases. You can go in one day, get in and get out, and it's done with. I've been to
right.
lots of arbitration cases, an hour, 2 hours long. The worst is a whole day. It was 6 hours in one case that I got into as an arbitration, which, you know lawyers. There's no lawyers there. There's no – although some people may bring a lawyer there. There's no lawyers there. There's no real judges. There's an arbitrator. Listens to the case. Everybody makes their points. Everybody gets their saying, and he makes a ruling at the end, and it's over. And that's it, okay? Look at what contract case is that complicated that's going to take 20 years to go, 10 years
yeah, right.
to get done?
Right.
But they all seem to be doing it. Why are they doing it? Because every time they go to court, every time they have a hearing, you know, the lawyer gets his $1,500 or whatever he charges, and it's just, you know, he writes his papers, he comes into the court, he gets his traveling, all this stuff. It just goes on and on and on and on. Okay, it's all just a bunch of fraud.
So let me ask you my one final question then, because I'm 57 years old, and I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm sick of this bullshit. Excuse my French, okay? And I want to finish up all the courses. I'm learning a lot of stuff on your website, and I'm learning a lot of stuff. What can I do, or is there... Am I just not ready to even start, you know, like talking to the sheriff and establishing, you know, because I like to establish a committee of safety as well and start gathering people around.
Well,
that's
how you go talk to the sheriff and start a committee of safety. You get 3 or 4 or 5 serious people to get together, get that organized, and you keep building that up as you go. But when you got 3, 4, 5 people, that's when you can go talk to the sheriff. And you get him to participate with you. You explain to him how it works. Let him go to the website and bring all the paperwork. Show him. And he'll find out that the Committee of Safety is all about empowering the sheriff.
Right.
It's, the whole thing is about empowering the sheriff and making sure every elected official, whether they're in a village, a town, or the
right.
county, or even the state, let's stay in the county level, in the county, that they all, all have to realize that sheriff is the guy, okay?
Right.
And you see, when you can establish that and get his John Hancock on that group working with you, and you tell him, look, you know, we really want you to participate. We are the people. We're going to grow and this, that, the other thing, and we're going to support you as long as you're supporting the Constitution. We're going to support you for your run. We want you to participate with us. You can send your deputies, and if you can't make it, we don't have a problem with that. Matter of fact, you should send your deputies. They should all come, okay, to our
right.
meetings. And
right.
if we're out of order, you should say something. We're not going to be out of order. We're here about the law, empowering you, and making sure everybody else obeys the law, and in a state of an emergency, that the sheriff is in control of the county. You know, look,
right.
the firemen already know what to do. The rescue people know what to do. You know, the ambulance people know what to do. Everybody knows what their job is. Everybody. But,
except
you know, it has to be... It has to be controlled. Right. Well, the people need to come to volunteer to be more hands than however
right.
they can be used. But
right.
look, at the control and the safety of the county is in the hand of the sheriff. He should be able to walk onto anything, and if he feels he needs to take control of something, a situation, then he needs to take control of it, you know?
Right.
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, where there was a demonstration going on one side, you know, for the governor, and a demonstration on the other side of the lake by the people against the governor, and they sent the cops down to get rid of him, and someone called the sheriff, and the sheriff came and kicked the cops out and knocked down the barriers and said, these people have a right to there was a sheriff who understood his power and authority. There was there was the people who called the right person, and they came, and they all obeyed him, okay? The sheriff took control.
Right.
That's what we need. We need a sheriff that's going to take control. We don't want a sheriff writing us a parking ticket because he's not a code-violating officer. He's a constitutional enforcement officer. You know, he's to make sure that the Constitution is not being violated. So who's going to violate the Constitution? It's not the people. It's the government. He's there to protect us from the government, ultimately. You know?
And where does the Sheriff's Department get their funds from? From the state or from us? Or how does it work?
They should be getting it directly from the county. And however the county gets a piece of their pie from the state, of course, anyway.
Okay.
You know, because there's the tax game that goes on, and they figure things.
Right.
You know, good taxes that are lawful taxes. And but unfortunately, they'll get some money from the state directly because they want to control the purse strings so they can pull some strings and puppetize him. They'll get some money federally because they want to pull the purse strings and puppetize him, and then he'll get some from the county. And that's not the way it should work.
Right.
You know, he's like any other county. His check comes from the county. His control, his jurisdiction is the county. He needs to be paid by the county. The county needs to get their funds in a way that's proper, you know, with the taxes they use. You know, there's the local tax, which is a county tax, you know, on sales tax. There's other tax monies that the state may apply that is to be, you know, delivered across the state to different county, you know, to each county. And however else all that works. I'm not an expert in those areas, so I don't know too much about it. But they certainly don't need money to be coming from the federal government.
Right. Okay.
And if
so that would be
given the federal government all their money, they wouldn't have to worry about the taking care of their own business. They'd be able to afford to pay what's necessary to control their own state and their counties. But again.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. Thank you for that, man.
I appreciate the call. Thanks. Okay, let's go to the next caller. By the way, I don't know if anybody, Gerard, if you've got anything to pipe in, or Brent, feel free to pipe in. But we'll go to our next caller, I guess. Fred from California, you got the mic.
My question is about defense attorneys. What's the statute of limitation on going after defense attorneys for throwing your tail in jurisdictions unknown and not defending us according
to
the Constitution?
There are no statutes in common law.
That's what I'm getting at.
There's no statutory limitations or anything because there's no statutes in common law. Look, if the case is really, really old, and if the witnesses can remember and the evidence is still good, you can, as long as you get the witnesses and the evidence together and prosecute the case or fight the case, you're in shape. Obviously, as the older the case gets, people die, people forget, and people, you know, so the natural things of events and everything will give a limitation to how long to wait. But as long as people can remember and the evidence is acceptable, you're there. There is no statutes of limitation.
So what information do we need to collect on attorneys that represent us in court? Because everybody that's in prison has an attorney that got him there.
Yeah. Well, you're right. This is going to be taking place. People are going to, I think, once we get the courts back, okay, That's what we have to do, and then organize the, and establish the administrations across the nation that are totally answered to no one but God themselves, you know, and just doing the right thing, and to each other. You see, that's how we set it up. We have a plan on keeping people doing the right thing within the administrations, within their counties, so we have a plan on that. But it doesn't. Their control is not from a national level; it's a local level. They had we just plan show them how to control themselves and get rid of people who are problematic and refuse to do the right thing. But in any event, once we create the administrations and they finally take control of the local process, then we have justice back in the courts. We're going to empty a lot of jails out, obviously. And we'll refill them back up with the judges and whoever else, prosecutors maybe, I don't know. But we'll refill them back up, I'm sure, quite quickly for in the beginning for a while. But the thing is that once the process is working inside your county and the courts are finally back to courts of justice, yeah, people are going to start going after Judge Joe and Judge Mary and Judge this one and that one and the prosecutor here who did this or that with the judge or the person who represented them maybe, you know, that didn't represent them correctly, you know, and so on and so forth. Whatever people understand and feel that they've been damaged, and they're going to want to go see the grand jury to tell their case so that they can get something criminally going after these people. And the process is really to restore, not necessarily to incarcerate, you know. We're not looking to put people in jail, really. But some people belong there. But, you know, look, it's all about restitution. So all of these people eventually are going to, you know, have to, you know, pay the piper, I guess, or whatever that saying is. But, you know, they're going to meet justice. And but once the courts, you know, God willing, we get to that point and the courts are courts of justice and we've dealt with all of that stuff, I think, you know, things will run quite smoothly. And I think the courts won't be as busy as they are. You know, we'll need less courts.
John?
We'll need and prisons. The only thing we need is a local jail. That's all. Someone needs to go to jail. They should go to jail locally so that they can continue a relationship with their family and friends. You know?
John,
yeah,
I was looking at the office of the Attorney General, and the Inspector General is the one that oversees all the alphabet organizations. So why not file with him as well as the Attorney General? The Inspector General. That's his.
Well,
we need prosecutors.
We need prosecutors.
That's what
and
he does.
So that's why. Well, I'd have to look into that to understand that better. Maybe you got something there that I'm not aware of. So I'll look into it.
The Office of the Inspector General under the Attorney General. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Well,
that's where
look
you get into
we do know that the
Bundys
Attorney
and
General.
Hammonds and,
right, but we do know that the Attorney General is supposed to be the key guy to make sure that justice flows in the courts. Ultimately, that's his job. Make sure the prosecutors are, you know, doing their job and what has to be done. And prosecutors are only to do what has to be done for what the grand jury tells them to do. If the grand jury doesn't indict, then there is nothing for them to, you know, get involved with or investigate or to do anything with. I'll have to look into what you're saying. I don't know. But right now, our focus is in on Sessions and the president. And we're going to expect the president to do the right thing. He said he was going to, so we're going to expect him to do it. And if he doesn't understand enough, he's going to have to bone up. And I think he has been boning up. I think, you know, we understand that he has read our paperwork. So if he's read our paperwork, he's got a pretty good education, I think. So that's the key.
Thank you,
but
John.
I'll look into it. Inspector General, you say?
Yes, sir. It's under the Attorney General.
Okay. I'll look into that and see once how I might be able to work that into our benefit, you know?
Yes, sir.
I don't know, Brent, do you know anything about that?
Huh? Oh, I just unmuted myself, John.
Just unmuted yourself. Go right ahead.
Yeah. Well, I don't have anything much to add to it. The thing that I noticed when the question was first asked is that
well, you're breaking up pretty bad.
Pardon?
You're breaking up pretty bad. Okay. Yeah. Try it again. Go ahead. Try it again.
Every person in federal prison is there because of some lawyer. Well, I suppose that's true in the sense that there's some prosecutor trying to put him in there. And oftentimes it is true that, of course, these appointed lawyers, I don't have much good to say about them. I've seen what they can do and what they're willing to do to, as they say, go along, get along, to play ball with the system, and then they'll actually just say so, and they're making a lot of money to do it, too. They pay them big. They get...
are a lot of cases where the lawyers don't defend their client as well as they should because they went into the back room with the judge, and that's the problem. We've seen that problem big time come up in... the Oregon case, Wildlife Preserve case, and what's going on in Nevada.
Uh-huh.
At their lawyers are running scared, and they're not doing what they got to be doing, you know? So, we've seen it in a lot of places. That's why I never get a lawyer to go into court with me, but I always have a problem going into court because they don't want to give me any respect or they don't want to hear me, you know?
Uh-huh. Trouble with lawyers is, unlike other people, you can kind of get to know... people in other professions before you employ them, but lawyers, if you don't know one already, you're just shooting in the breeze, and you never know what you're going to get. That's a fact. That's all I had to add, nothing more than that.
All right, appreciate that. Okay, Fred, anything else? I'm going to look into the Attorney General, the Inspector General, to see what I can find out about that, so I don't know anything about it. So.
That would be the question for Brent. I wanted to know if he knew about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, are you familiar with the Inspector General?
No, because...
Yeah, you're breaking up again. I don't know what you did before. You did fix it.
Better?
Try it.
I've got to hold my head in a certain way and all that, hold my hand a certain way. At any rate, what exactly...
With your finger, stick it in the right direction. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. That's about it. Can you ask that again? Maybe I'll understand what you were saying about
Fred,
the
make the
general.
Point, Fred. Yeah, make the
Real
point,
quick.
Fred, about the Inspector General. Fred?
Okay. When you look up U.S. government,
uh-huh.
and you go to Office of the Attorney General, there's an Office of the Inspector General who oversees all of the alphabet corporations. And the way they handle their legal cases, rogue agencies like the problem we've had with Bureau of Land Management and with the EPA. He's the guy that reins them in. These
uh-huh.
people aren't supposed to pass their own legislation and enforce it. Okay.
Apparently they're not doing their job anyway, but go ahead.
I'm just going to make a comment. I've never seen those inspector generals do anything except draw paychecks. Maybe there's something they do. The people they hire to watch, the people that are hired to watch for our, to stand watch and guard over our law and our liberties are people that are paid to just be yes men for them. They're just paid positions. All the government is that way, and it's getting worse. It's getting worse rapidly. People get government jobs like the CIA, the FBI. Those guys don't know what they're doing. And they don't care. Why should they? If it comes in your way, whether they produce or don't produce. The only thing they have to be careful about is
Yeah, we're losing you now. We got most of that, but we're losing you now, Brent. Try it again.
I think he's just plain gone.
Yeah, we lost Brent altogether. I don't hear nothing.
Yep, right.
All right, well, I think he pretty much answered your question, Fred. They're just drawing checks. I think most of them, that's what most of these government people are doing, drawing checks. And You know, the agencies are agencies, not corporations. You know, they may like them to be corporations. They may have incorporated them. All that is fraud. They're still agencies, and they still took oaths, and they still work for us. And we got to make sure they understand that as soon as possible. And that's what our court case is about.
But you got to attack the people that are supposed to have the power to make changes. That's
right. Well, look at. I'll tell you what. If the let's take the FBI or any of these alphabet agencies, okay? Ultimately, it comes up to someone in the cabinet of the president, eventually, who controls these agencies or those agencies or the other agencies. So ultimately, the bottom line, the buck stops at the president. And I think we need to go right to the top on everything, because we are going to go after the FBI. Look at, what was that guy's name, that FBI agent, the FBI guy they just got rid of?
Comey.
Okay. He was part of what took place out there, out in Oregon. He was part of what took place when they killed Lavoie Finnegan. Okay. He was part of all that. He threw his hat into the game, just like the governor did, and they came together and they made a new plan, and everything changed, and within 4 or 5 days, that man was dead. So he's part of that, and we need to go after him. And if this new one that they got coming in, if he's not going to do his job, we're going to go after him too. And if he doesn't, we need to go after the president to tell the president what's going on. And that's why we're copying the president in everything we do. What we've done with Sessions, the president got a copy of, and now we're going to be doing some other things soon with him, and the president's going to get a copy, and he's going to see the guy's not doing his job. So we're going to give the president the opportunity to do what he has to do until at some point maybe we'll have to tell him what he has to do. Because, you can't make America great if we don't have courts of justice. It'll never be great if we don't have courts of justice, period.
John, the FBI only has 4 jurisdictions, period. Do you know what they are?
Well, generally speaking.
It's counterfeiting.
Right.
Or forge, or like with the money, it's doing something in international law, or it's piracy, or it's trying to take over the government. Now, the only place the FBI has let us down is in the court system and with the jihadis coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with you. There may be a little more powers. I'd have to go back to the Constitution and think about the authority that was given and that might fall under the FBI. So, but I kind of agree with you.
Well, it was just created as a Bureau of Investigation. That was all.
Yeah, Gerard's trying to say something too. Gerard?
There's only like 4 crimes that the federal government's supposed to be concerned with. That's what he's talking about.
I would agree with that. You know, again, you may miss one. I'd have to go back and look through the Constitution, code through it, and question
it. Counterfeiting, crime on the high seas, treason, and I think he mentioned the other one. That's all it is. That's it. Of course, now they have more.
International law.
Right.
Yeah, I agree, with you on that. They've overstepped their authority. We need to push them back. But again, you can't fix anything till you bring justice into the courts. When you get justice into the courts and the people take control of the courts, then we can fix everything. Matter of fact, everything will fix itself real quick because they know what they're doing and what they shouldn't be doing. And they're going to stop doing what they shouldn't be doing because they're going to be seeing people go into jail. So the whole thing will fix itself quite quickly, in my opinion, once you bring justice back into the courts. We have to bring justice into the courts. You know what Rothschild said, give me control of the nation's money, and I don't care who makes the law or this, that, or the other thing, blah, blah, blah. Well, he left something out. He's got to have control of the courts, too. He's got to pay those people off with that money. Because if he doesn't control the courts, I don't care how much money he's got, we can put him in jail, along with everyone else that has taken his money. So, you can stop it. So they got to control the courts is what they got to do. And they do. They control the courts. The courts are controlled by corporate America, the New World Order, which is part of corporate America also anyway. And again, special interest groups, which again, all part of the same process. They're all working together to destroy this nation.
Hey, just for your information, the Inspector General of the United States of America is Mr. Horowitz, who oversees a nationwide workforce of more than 450 special agents, auditors, inspectors, attorneys, and support staff, whose mission is to detect and deter waste, fraud, abuse, and misconduct in the DOJ programs and personnel, and to promote economy and efficiency in the department operations. Now, if you look up Mr. Horowitz, I think he's been compromised. You'll see all kinds of stuff on him. He's not any better than any of the other gooks up there, you know?
Yeah.
And if you want to get a good perspective on where to look at, everybody loves this guy, Trey Gowdy, and I love him too. I think he's great. But Trey Gowdy is a prosecutor and a lawyer, and I watched the Chris Dan Hall show the other day, and if you go on YouTube and you poke in, Trey Gowdy just said that we were a kingdom. It's a Chris Dan Hall show. She answered him. She said, because Trey sat there and said, I'm the chairman of the subcommittee on the Benghazi chairman committee, and I can't even subpoena the record Clinton's email records that will solve the case because the House rules don't provide for it. Don't let me. And she said, what are you talking about, Mr. Gowdy? House rules? What about the Constitution? You don't know your power. I mean, she really tore him up. And everybody got mad at her, but she went back and she said, look, if he's sitting there as a congressman or whatever he is, he's supposed to know the Constitution. And he's not supposed to go with House rules when it's violating a constitutional right. He should know as a congressman he has the right to go in there and forget about House rules. So that's a very good tape to listen to because Trey is very conservative. He's a great guy, but he's sitting there doing these stupid hearings that aren't amounting to a hill of beans because they have no teeth. If they're not going to indict anybody and put anybody into jail, you might as well give up. Don't even watch it, you know. And so, at least Christiane Hall says gives the numbers and says call them one day every month. If it's worth one call, it's worth 30 calls. At least they, just like the lobbyists are relentless, we could be relentless with something. Every time they say something stupid like that, we should be on them because that's part of their education. That's my opinion anyway, you know.
And the biggest joke is when these people, especially from the IRS, or you come in for, it doesn't matter where they're coming from, and they plead the fifth. That's the biggest joke in the world. I mean, how is it that Congress lets them get away with that? How could they? They should be got. Look at if they're employed, if they're appointed, they're gone at that point. Okay, and whoever takes their place needs to come and answer for these people. Because if they're pleading the fifth and they got something to hide, they have a duty to speak. And when they don't speak, that is fraud, okay? So if they want to plead the fifth, then they need to quit. They need to get out of the way so someone else could take their place and come in, investigate, and then tell the truth on what's really going on there. And Congress shouldn't allow that to happen, but they do. Such a joke. I can't believe they're that dumb, that they don't realize that they don't have the power and authority to plead the fifth now.
That's like having an employee at the cash register. You come in and you say, there's money missing. I want to know, Joey, how much money was in the register when you started? He goes, I refuse to answer that question. I think you're gone. You know what I mean? I think it's all over after that one.
Exactly. Look at... They've been given certain powers and authority, and therefore they have to answer. They have a duty to speak. So I don't know why they let them get away with it. Okay, as far as I'm concerned, you know, these people, they refuse to speak, and they need to be indicted. It's that simple, you know, because they must speak. They must be removed from office so that you can have someone else get in there and tell us what they've been doing. Because then they'll get a copy of the records and everything necessary so that they can come up and speak.
The key word is duty, John. They don't know that they have a duty, nor do they care. They don't know what duty means. They have a duty to speak.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Okay. All right, Fred, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. We'll go to the next caller. Let's see. Ollie from Colorado. You've got the mic. Go right ahead, Holly.
Hello. Do you hear me?
We can hear you. How you doing,
Holly? Okay, yeah, I've got a couple of things. A few days ago, Ron connected me with Stacy Benner out in Vegas in Clark County. I don't know if she's a county organizer or a director or what. Her and her husband's the one that leased a house down in Henderson for the P3 wives and family when they come up. She knows all the Patriots, all the P3s, all the flag wavers. She knows the politics in the Patriot groups, and she also knows the politics in Vegas. She's part of that Michelle Fiore, Shelley Shelton clique, both assemblywomen. And I've been trying to get a contact out there, but I'll tell you what, Nye County, where the prison is, it is ripe for a COS. And we were talking about problems, and she was telling us that her dad owns property out in Pahrump in town, and he got some property outside of town. He wanted to put a slot meet on there, and they said no. Okay, so I'd like to spend a lot of time with her on the phone and try to get some things going, but I don't have the time. Also, she would be an excellent one out there to do a weekly update on the Nevada situation. Also, she would be an excellent candidate to start getting affidavits from the court observers out there. Okay. And the next thing is, I reached another milestone in the NLA News deal the other day. OBS come out with a green screen plugin that is awesome. It's the best one I've seen yet. I bought some more software to make it work. I can use my studio camera for a webcam, okay? And I can sit there behind the news desk, pull people in on Skype, put their webcam on the TV monitors in the studio, and go live stream. Okay, I'm ready to go. The other night, I was sitting there. I had Jared on there, and I was sitting in a bar in St. Croix. I'm sitting there talking to the customers and the barmaid, and Jared's falling out of his chair, but Gerard can verify that thing. It is awesome. It is absolutely awesome what I can do with this stuff now.
All right, so we should be very close to moving on our TV programming, right?
Yeah, when I get done with this other project, Terry comes up and helps me. She lives about, 10-20 miles down. She's down in Longmont. She comes up and helps me when We're going to start putting out some stuff. Also, I might mention that I've also learned ways I can go live stream to Facebook or YouTube or any of them, but I would do it on Facebook and YouTube, where I'll go on there and do a news bust, a news break, and I'll promote this. Okay, the NLA's doing this. You know, you'll be on the newscast tomorrow, whatever. You know, just like the short news bus they do, and do it professionally. So, we're there. The team's hitched up. We just got to pull them out of the barn. How are you?
Okay, appreciate that. All right. Okay, let's move on to our next person is Alan from North Carolina. Go ahead, Alan. And by the way, Gerard, keep me informed on how things are going between you and Ali and when we're ready, because I'd like to see that move forward quickly. Alan.
Okay, John, just wanted to kind of bring up a little bit on that, one of the earlier callers talking about the Declaration of Independence. I'm still We're getting a lot of things together, and it seems like it's moving a little bit, but I still think we're shooting a wide pattern here, and we need to narrow it down. We talked to August G-I-R-O-D, I forgot how you pronounce his last name. But anyway, the guy in Kentucky, the Amish guy,
hang on 1 second, Alan. Gerard, have you ever heard back from the Amish guy with the milk and stuff?
No, I was unable to get a hold of him. He called me, and I couldn't hear a thing he was saying. He was on a real bad connection. So I don't know what we can do to get him on a good phone line.
He was on a call earlier tonight. Is he still here?
Was he?
Yeah.
Take a look, see if he's still here. We'll unmute him. Yeah, go ahead, Alan.
Well, he's got about four lines he can call in on from different locations. But, you know, our founders, forefathers did is that, you know, they did present cases into the parliament and all this kind of stuff, and they couldn't get it to go anywhere. And the whole thing about it was that the colonists was being arrested for false charges and all this, and then, you know, they finally said it's enough and drew a line in the sand. And here we've got plenty of cases. I think we need to draw down on where the government, the federal government, is coming against the American people and doing these same false charges and putting them up in arrest and all this kind of stuff in arraignment and Samuel's a good case. I don't, you know, and there's been other ones, but I don't know why we need to wait on anything else. We need to take swift action against these federal, I mean, you're talking about local, and I agree, we got some really contaminated local judges and everything, but here's a federal judge, and I've been on several cases with federal judges that are corrupt as well. And so, it's insane that we just allow an innocent man with innocent man period, but with a family of his and everything else for doing nothing, which it's not, this case is not about milk. It's about the natural products that he grew on his farm to get that a little bit straightened out. But, for us to wait around while he's still in jail and then going to prison for every length of time the judge decides makes him tickles him pink to put him in prison for, I'm just not happy with, as a veteran, to sit around for that, and we need to take action. I've been talking to Rod Class, and he's kind of a little bit in the same direction, but he's going to altogether different to show, directly in their own court and drawing charges against what's going on and showing them where they, you know, where they're violating the Constitution and law and everything else, doing perjury in their own court and treason.
Two things we're willing to do here. One is to do habeas corpus, and the other one is to do a show cause to the judge concerning the case and, you know, and what's going on here. But in order to do that, we need contact with an individual who could act as a next friend, which this individual we were talking with, we presume would be the next friend, or he would find someone else that has at least the communications with the individual in jail enough to be able to represent his, you know, what his thinking is, what his position is, and also maybe some experience of what went on in the courtroom. And we were supposed to get, I believe on this, we were looking to get the court record on this thing too. But at least we need a next friend affidavit from a next friend and more information concerning this case so that we can do something. Until we get that, we can't do anything. And I know Gerard was supposed to be connecting with him, and I know he's been having problems making that connection, and hopefully we'll continue to try to make that connection. But that's all we can do. What we have to do is get it into the court. Once we do the show cause, and they're probably going to you know, default on it. They can't answer these questions. To answer them, they'd have to lie or reveal themselves who they are, so they don't want to do those two things. So silence is their best friend, and they'll try to get a lawyer to say, ah, this is no standing, and so on and so forth, and that's not going to work in this case anyway. They've already tried that. It's not going to work. We're not going to let it work. So the next step from there is an indictment. Now, we're not going to move to indictments until we feel comfortable that the indictments are going to have some force behind it. That's why we need to work with prosecutors. We need to get a prosecutor. We need to get, the Attorney General to get a few prosecutors to work with us, which is his duty to do. And once we can get that, we're going to get that eventually at some point. The question is how long. The more pressure, the more cases, the more things that go on, the more exposure to the president and to other people. And at some point, we're looking for critical mass. If we hit critical mass, that'll explode this whole thing up. So we're looking for critical mass, and that'll eventually happen. We can't control that, but it's going to take place at some point in time. But the president could give us critical mass just by acknowledging what we're doing, getting rid of this guy if he's not going to do his job, and getting the guy that's going to give us some prosecutors so that we can start prosecuting these cases and bring justice back into our courts and return our courts back to jurisdictions known, such as the law of the land, period. Because we're not there. We haven't been there for quite some time. And this is all on the federal level. The state levels is a no-brainer. We'll take them out in no time at all, the state-level courts. They're nothing. Once the federal courts are on board, everything else is a federal offense, ultimately, the denial of due process. So we'll take every one of those judges down.
Well, August is Samuel's son, Samuel's one that's in jail. But August is his son's one that spoke last week as far as that part. But
We need to get communicating with him somehow, or someone that's got a phone that can bring us together with this. I mean,
I've got several contact numbers for him, and I talked to him August actually today. But it's a little bit of going through a third party, but he's able to be contacted. But there's a lot of documents as far as Samuel turned in.
Maybe you can help us get this stuff. Maybe you can help us. Why don't you give Gerard a call?
He can send the documents in right now, all the paperwork we asked him for. I mean, going on the phone doesn't help me with that. We need like the docket, the judge's name, and the particulars in order to fill out the paperwork.
We need everything.
Well, I've got the judge's name and all. Like I said, it's all on the internet. It's Judge Reese, but
we need someone involved. We need a next friend. We need someone who's going to do an affidavit.
Yeah, we've got to have an affidavit.
So we need a next friend. The next friend is someone. Anytime you do an affidavit and you write a fact in the affidavit and you're swearing to it, it's got to be firsthand information. You have to be the eyewitness to this. If someone is in prison, there is an exception to that rule, and that is a person who is called the next friend can write an affidavit on behalf of that person as firsthand knowledge by knowing that person and that person telling them the truth, and that affidavit sits as fact, as a sworn affidavit. So we need a next friend.
As far as getting a hold of August, there's a way that Samuel could get, he can call out of jail and talk to Gerard or whatever, as far as that goes, too. But
why don't you and Gerard connect so you guys can get together on the phone and then try to make the connection for us with Gerard, and he can try to get all the information we need at that point, You want to do that?
You think Samuel or August needs help making the affidavit? Is that going to be a problem? Do they need help writing that thing?
Well, I've got somebody actually in Kentucky that's will be taking the written thing and putting it in the computer, so then it can be printed and then it can be signed and then sent in to you. So we already kind of got that in place. which I'm going to be taking off from North Carolina and heading there in Kentucky in about 2 to 3 weeks, trying to get some other documents in the court too. But I'm going to go visit the sheriff and all this other stuff. But, I understand what you're saying, but there again, we're going home to our families or bed or whatever it may be, where an innocent man has just been taken up on charges by our government. And, I just can't wait for critical mass. I mean, I just think if
right.
we had...
Well, we don't have to necessarily wait for critical mass. We may be able to get something done once we get the papers and start filing papers in our court case. We may be able to move this judge to do some right things here. I don't know. Put the fear of the people into him also.
Look, we're not doing
we can't
anything.
Do that until
let me
we
explain
get...
something. I don't think he understands. The paperwork that we're going to file... is going to be even more powerful than anything an attorney will file in that court. If you went and got an attorney and he said, I'm going to put paperwork in, I'm going to put a habeas corpus in, our paperwork is going to be more powerful because it's coming as the common law grand jury from all 50 states, and they have to answer it. It goes in on the record. So even if you had an attorney, they won't file this stuff because they'll tell the judge will tell them, don't you file that, I'll hold you in contempt. They can't tell us that. We file it anyway. We don't care. And we put it in. So It's probably the most powerful thing you could do now. Now, sometimes the judge sees the trouble coming and he doesn't want it. And a lot of times we've had some success with them getting frightened on fighting this group, and they let go because it's not worth their trouble. When they see you got a whole group behind you and they look and they see who we are, you could get some relief that way where they'll actually make an excuse to let him out. Because look at every day he's in there, they're liable. They're going to pay. You know what I mean? There's damages there. They're damaging him every day. You know, he's...
Well, I understand, but they're not going to pay unless we gather together and force it in action. And I'm fine if President Trump steps up or Attorney General steps up, whatever. But if they don't, then it still boils down to the people. So I think we need to... Like I said, if we had 1,000 people from an NLA would work on this thing and then show up in Kentucky and they'd feel the pressure from that as well. But we were told that if the government ever becomes a damage to the people, then we need to amend it, and if we're necessary, to abolish it. And it just seems like we, from all the different groups that I've been a part of, we keep stepping back from that order that we've been given from the founders through the Declaration of Independence. And I agree with the deal with the sheriff, and that's why I'm running for sheriff of my county. But, and that's why I'm going to talk to this one that is from the county that Samuel's from, that he put a statement out with another person's help. But he still put a statement out and said he was going to, that Samuel was in his jurisdiction and it was under his protection. But the U.S. Marshals came in the county anyway and kidnapped him and took him to jail outside the county. So, they're kind of left.
You mean the sheriff was sticking up for this guy?
He was.
Wow, he should go arrest these marshals.
Right.
Well,
the sheriff could take our habeas corpus.
He came into his jurisdiction. All he's got to do is find
out
what
right.
county
that
marshal's
jail.
In, call the sheriff over there and say, hey, I'm coming into your county. I'd like for you to help to assist me. I want to arrest that guy. And go arrest him. So he needs
Look,
to know that.
We could write a habeas corpus and the sheriff could take it over there and say, I have a habeas corpus to bring this man forward.
He also should go over to the jail where he's at. Again, he's got to get the sheriff in that county to work with him.
Well,
and go
I'm
over to the jail and demand that.
To
demand that. We'll do the habeas corpus to turn it over to the sheriff.
Well, that's what I'm looking to do.
But again, we need someone who we can communicate to, get all the information. It's not as easy as we need affidavits. We need all of the detailed information, the case number, the judge, the prosecutor, all the detailed information that we have listed on our paperwork. We need to get the transcript or the audio or both from the trials. And we need that stuff in order to proceed to go forward. We don't have nothing to go forward with. What are we going to write?
I understand that too. Of course, they're not. I've got the case number. I got the judges. I got the prosecutor. I got the sheriffs. I got the jail. As far as an affidavit, it's just an affidavit we're working on to what criminal activities been observed.
If you can handle getting the paperwork, you need to be communicating with Gerard. Do you have Gerard's phone number? Gerard, do you ever have Alan's phone number?
I don't think I have Alan's
Gerard,
number.
Look on the thing. He's got a 704 number in the queue. Take his number and write it down and give him a call tomorrow or something. That's your number you're calling in on, right, Alan?
It is, yeah.
704 number. Gerard, write down his number, give him a call tomorrow, and start working with him as the connection. And let's see what we can pull together. Go ahead, what?
I don't see Gerard on the call right now, but he was on earlier.
The
name is... There is 1-606 area code person on. You might unmute him and just see if that's him. He might have signed
Gerard?
Back in again. Gerard.
Who?
August Gerard. The Amish
man
you're talking
about. The other Gerard.
Not
okay.
Gerard. No, not our guy.
Okay.
Okay. We could unmute him and see if that's the person.
Yeah, if you can find him.
Yep, I unmuted the 606 area code. Can
Hi.
You tell us who you are and what state?
Hi, this is Rebecca, 606 in Kentucky.
Okay. Right church, wrong queue. Sorry.
Okay.
Well, she's main contact with there. She's been out there to the farm and been talking to August Samuel's wife. She's got some of this paperwork, and she's turned...
Okay, so then Gerard, write down her phone number also and give her a call tomorrow. What's your name again, 606? What's your name again, first name?
Rebecca.
Rebecca. Okay, Rebecca, yes. Gerard's going to try to get a hold of you, hopefully tomorrow. He'll write down... You see her number, right, Gerard? Two-thirds down?
Yeah, I've got it.
All right, well, Jen's got it.
Yeah, I've got it. I'll put it in Gerard's Skype bin.
All right. So now you got two contacts, hopefully, for this case, and we can get something going on it. All right. Anything else, Alan?
Well, that's about it. Like I said, I'm going to be going up there in about 2 or 3 weeks, so I'd like to have assistance with as much paperwork that I can have in front of me, but also in hand. So they say, if I talk to the sheriff and says, no, I haven't seen anything, I say, okay, that's fine, right here it is. And, and tell him his duties, his responsibilities, and remind him of not only his oath, but what he swore to when he signed the letter saying that he was going to protect Samuel and all this kind of stuff. And say, let's go visit this other sheriff and let's talk to her and see if we can bring her on board with this situation.
Well, when they arrested him, was the sheriff wasn't around, didn't know about the arrest? The
sheriff didn't know about it. Nobody, no deputy was around or anything.
The other thing is these federal agents should not be coming into anyone's jurisdiction, any county, anywhere, to make any arrests without notifying the sheriff first.
Well, we know that.
They got a warrant to serve. They got to show it to the sheriff because these warrants aren't warrants anyway. They never get a signed warrant.
But look, if the sheriff goes over to the other sheriff and he has our paperwork, that empowers that sheriff because he's not doing it alone. He's doing it under our paperwork, and that's this nationwide group. You look at that sheriff taking a lot on his shoulders going in there. You know, he's committing personal and political suicide. So you got to lift him up, and he's got to have people behind him. And if he can carry our paperwork, that empowers him even more because he can say, "Hey, it's the grand jury, and I'm serving the paperwork, and I want him in my county." Let's answer. These are not lawful charges, and we have this paperwork from the common law grand jury that says the same thing. Mm-hmm. Because don't try to ruin him.
Hey, by the way, let me just make this quick announcement. There's only a couple people in the queue, so if anybody has a question or a comment they want to get into the queue, now's the time to do it. There's only a couple people there. Star 6 to get into the queue, and I think it'll tell you to do one. All right, go ahead, Alan. Finish up.
Well, like I said, I'm going to be working, trying to also get together all these different groups Sheriff Mack of the Constitutional Sheriffs, of the Oath Keepers, and NLA, and all, and there's several other Constitution, other groups and people. I just feel like if we can get a representative or the leader from all these groups to come together on a conference call or just face-to-face and start drawing up a full-fledged plan where one's going to back the other one up and come with a remedy on accessing from the Bundys to Hammonds to Samuel's case to, you know, all these other ones that's been going on.
Well, if you can get the Oath, look at, we're up to the conversation and the meeting and everything. If you can get the Oath Keepers to do it, and you can get the leader of the Oath Keepers, and you can get Sheriff Mack to come and talk with us, and we're up for that. But it's difficult to get those people. But we're here anytime they want to talk. We'll talk to anyone, but and as long as, you know, we're all focusing in on the law, and that's the key, and we all should be, you know, we all should be. So
most of them are. It's just everybody's kind of looking at it from a little point of view, and I said, well, that's kind of fine, too. When we went to war and we fought a battle, we've had different groups that come in from different angles, and some of them for long-range ship firing or whatever it may be, but we still had a common enemy and was all working to win that. So that's the way I see this here is the only way it's going to really work. If we just unify and go after the enemy, which is domestic, then, that we can pull this thing off. But if we stay splintered and worried about who's going to gain the credit, then we're just not going to get very far. So, but I really appreciate what you're doing, John, and all these years or whatever, but I just feel like it's going to be kind of time to now or never.
Well, now is the time. Now is the time. We're telling our membership, now is the time. We got lots of papers to file and do things with, and it's going to be coming out like a train. It's just going to be piling on, so... All right, Alan, appreciate your time. We'll go to the next caller. Well, thanks for the call.
Thank you. What time, Gerard, do you think you have be calling in, so I'll be kind of waiting on your call or know what time you're going to call?
Well, what time zone are you in?
Well, he's in North Carolina. He's on our eastern side.
Okay.
And I think, let's see, the other caller
Kentucky
is on
too.
Central, right?
Yeah, no, Kentucky's eastern as well.
Okay, yeah, half of it is. Half is eastern,
so,
half is central. So,
where they're at is eastern.
What do you prefer,
all
morning
at the same time.
If I'm going to do it in the morning, it'd have to be 9 o'clock. In the evening, it'd have to be after 5.
Yeah.
So,
whatever time's fine with you, I just kind of...
Yeah, try him in the morning. If you can't get them, try them in the evening, then. That's all. Make the connections. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot, Alan. Appreciate it. Cool.
John?
Yeah.
I had a quick question from a new member that's been studying Carl Miller's stuff, and he wonders if you could say a few words about the judges must interpret the Constitution in your favor, according to the American Jurisprudence book and so
right.
on.
Right. That's a fact. Whenever there's an unsurety, it always has to rest on the side of the person, of the individual, given that opportunity. What do you want me to say about it? I mean, that he's correct on it. The Constitution, man.
Yeah. Now, in practice, how does that go?
Well, they ignore it in practice.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
As far
That's
as the judges are concerned. Look it. You can't get these guys are all criminals. I don't know of any that aren't, to be honest with you. I just don't know of any that aren't. Every judge I've ever come in contact with, they belong in jail, every single one of them. Is there a good guy out there? know, maybe. I don't know anymore. But they're just not going to listen. They just don't care. They're all for the status quo and corporate America, and that's it. You know, it's just, they just don't care. I mean, it's so sad on how far it's come. You know, if we would have been doing what we were doing today 20 years ago, I think it would have been a different story. They've already been gone through a meltdown. Right now, they think they're so well protected and they don't have to worry about nothing. We got to put them in jail. We got to get them worrying. It's the only thing I can say. I don't know. It's not going to work in the courts. They just don't care. So, okay, let me go to the next poll.
John, there's that one case they went through 7 judges, and now they're bringing judges out of retirement that owe them favors. It's all judges that don't care, and that's what they're down to. They wheeling them up there. I forget what case it is. Harley knows. Next thing they're going to do is unbury one of them out of the ground and stick them up there.
Wheeling them out of nursing homes, right? Okay. All right, let's go to April for North Carolina. April.
Hi. I was just listening to everything y'all saying, and I do have a couple questions. Sure. What about writing a bill and submitting it to Congress?
Well, they don't even obey the bills that they should be obeying. The laws that they make to begin with, the judges certainly don't obey them. They obey the ones that they want. I mean, Congress is not the answer. The answer is clear to me, and that's why we're doing what we're doing, and it's clear to a lot of people that are involved with what we're doing, and that is the courts. If you bring justice into the courts, we can put them all in jail. Just the threat of the fact that justice has returned will force these people to either run and hide under a rock somewhere, leave town, or start doing the right thing. One or the other, okay? It'll force them once they know justice is in the court and we're coming out if they're going to break the law. You know, now we're not here to put them all in jail because we're here just to win back the courts. And once we win back the courts, you know, then they're going to have to answer to the people that they've damaged. If people bring charges against them and want to go up and talk to the grand jury concerning the damage that Judge Joe or Mary or Fred or whatever did to them, and the grand jury hears the case and says, yeah, we're going to indict. Or we're going to get that judge and talk with them and see how we can make restitution, how we can fix it. If they can't fix it, then they'll bring it to the trial, you know, send it to the trial jury. This is what's got to happen. We need to put some of these people in jail now, soon. We need to indict. We need to put them in jail. Once we indict a few judges that are breaking the law, the rest of them will get right in line. They'll either start quitting their jobs or they'll be obeying the law, one or the other. They're not going to have any other choice. And so the answer is in the courts, bringing justice back into the courts. Because even these congressmen that are taking money, look, these congressmen and even the senators are taking all this funny money from the special interest group. That's nothing but a payoff. That's all that is. That's a bribe. They need to stop taking that money. Because, look, they've been sent there by their constituents to do the will of the people. Instead of doing the will of the people, their constituents at home, they're doing the will of corporate America, of the special interest groups. And they're taking money to do it. That's a crime.
Yes.
That needs to stop.
I agree. My other question is, can the grand jury order a prisoner to be released on the grounds of lack of due process?
Well, look at all you got to do is do a habeas corpus. The grand jury can do a habeas corpus for the individual through an ex-friend and order their release that way. Absolutely.
Okay.
But a habeas corpus has to go through the process, which is only a 3-4 day process. It's not a big thing. And remember, look at a habeas corpus is just a statutory process of due process. If the people aren't getting due process, then the habeas corpus is that process to force it through the statutory system that they should be obeying. And they're not even obeying that. Okay, they're not even obeying that. That's how bad it is. And any judge that disobeys a habeas corpus and either buries it, conceals it, or removes it from the files, that judge needs to be indicted and that judge needs to be considered for jail by the trial jury. They need to be indicted. They have to be indicted.
Good. about grand juries. How many are we looking to have in America?
Well, we're not looking. We're not building grand juries. We're building administrations for the grand jury, which is four people in every county. There are 3,134 counties. The last count, I think it was. So there's about 3,100 administrators that need to be created. You know, four for each county. So that's 13,000-14,000 administrators. Some of the bigger counties, like the Bronx and Brooklyn and Queens and some other cities, you know, they'll need more than four. But generally speaking, everyone, they all have to have at least four. And those four people call the grand juries. They bring them together. They give them the and the trial juries, and they give them the orientation, and they prepare them for the trial or for the hearing of the potential indictments. And they're there to answer any of the questions that these people have and help them write the paperwork and making sure that the paperwork is written in the will of the grand jury. So that's what we're doing. We're building that. So every county should have a sitting grand jury, you know, going through the process. And I don't know that – look, I've heard of places where grand juries have been going on for 6 months and even longer, even years. And that's ridiculous. A grand jury, I don't think, should be sitting any longer than a couple of weeks, depending on, you know, what they're going to, you know, maybe they have to come and hear a case, you know, a whole bunch of cases once a week for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, or maybe even 4 weeks. If they're only coming in one day a week to hear cases, and then they should be turned around and another grand jury should be pulled up. These people shouldn't be sitting in as constant grand juries. And, of course, trial juries are pulled up as a trial comes up. A trial jury needs to be pulled and sit for the duration of the case.
Okay.
Which so most cases shouldn't be taken a couple of days to a week. I mean, most cases.
So they're going to be pulled up just like trial juries are?
Absolutely. The only difference is they're not going to be tainted by the judge, nor they're going to be tainted by the prosecutor. They're not going to be, you know, indicting ham sandwiches, you know, and they're going to get the truth about what their power and authority is. And they're going to get a good understanding of their responsibility, coming with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and what justice is, and a basic understanding of jurisdiction and the law, and what due process is, the basics, you know. You know, you get 8 hours. You get a good day with to orientate these people. You can get a lot into them. They need to understand nullification. They need to understand that people are not controlled by statutes. We're controlled by ourselves. We control our own behavior. When we injure somebody, we're responsible for that injury. Other than that, we're responsible for our behavior. And, you know, so they need to understand these things. And again, 8 hours is more than sufficient. You know, also we can give them the opportunity. And look, at along with this, we also realize and have kind of a sketched out plan for this also, and going after, as soon as we're getting into the courts and start getting the justice system back up, we need to get into the schools. We need to get, you know, education into the schools. Our children need to understand these processes. They need to get a real education on the Constitution and American history, a real education on what a committeeman is and what the job and the authority and everything of a jury, grand jury or a trial jury. They need to understand it. They need to understand the basics.
Right. Okay. I wanted to ask you, once we get the ball rolling and stuff, there's a lot of doctors out there that are corrupt and people don't have a place to turn to do anything about it. And would that affect that? Would people be able to...
I'm sorry. There's a lot of what out there? Doctors?
Corrupt doctors, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Doctors that are defaming people's character and doctors that are... turning people into drug addicts and then turning around.
Well, look,
and...
one of the big problems is this, okay? And people don't have access to the grand jury. You just can't get to the grand jury. They should be open. You should be able to go down to your courthouse and say and get onto a docket, you know, get onto a schedule somewhere and say, hey, look, I'd like to talk with the grand jury. And they should be able to look at the schedule and say, okay, you know, 3 weeks from now or 2 weeks from now or whatever it is on Thursday at 10 o'clock in the morning, we can get you an appointment. You know, and people need to have that opportunity to come in and talk to the grand jury. You know, and, you know, once we set up the administration, they can get started immediately with the administration, because the administration is the investigative body for the grand jury. They'll assist them in an investigation, or they'll do investigations, or someone will come in to see the administrators, someone who's got a lot of information on a lot of things they've been researching and studying, and get all this information on all this corruption, and you know, we can, and the administration could work with that person to give them more in power, you know, to go in and get more information, access to files in different places, and also the administration can try to negotiate, you know, some of the cases where, you know, there's nothing really heavily criminal or anything into it, you know, no serious, you know, violence or anything. But cases where you could bring the two people together and say, hey, look, you know, the restitution needs to be made. What do you want for restitution? What do you think is right? They could try to work out a deal, kind of, you know, negotiate it out, arbitrate it. And if they can't fix it, then they send it to the grand jury, who will consider indictment. They'll probably try to fix it, hopefully. And you'll empower them to let them know that in a lot of these cases, they can try to make it right without even going into court. I mean, if you can get the person restitution that's been injured, you know, why even bother going into the court? Just make it so. And, and of course, if you can't get that done, then they got to go to a trial.
Last question. I'd like to go out and, like, pull more people into NLA. And we sometimes have, like, things going on in town where everybody gathers in town for things. Do we have any pamphlets online that can be downloaded that I could bring with me?
Yeah, we have a few. I forget where they're at. Maybe Jan remembers. And we also can there's a place you could download videos that, you know, you can show their short videos, maybe 20 minutes long, and there's other ones that are 45 minutes long. That will, you know, you can show and people can learn, or flyers. We have flyers.
Okay,
Jen, do you remember where they are at? It's been so long since I looked at those things.
I ran across them the other day, but I don't remember which tab they were hiding under. I can dig them out.
Jen will try to get it before the night is open, but if not, maybe next Monday we'll make an announcement on that.
Okay.
Sounds good. Jan, if you can make a note on that, if we can't get the answer tonight, we'll get it next Monday. We'll just, during the you know, the questions, you can bring that up.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. And I yield.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thanks. Okay, let us go to Pam from Puerto Rico, is it? Let's see. Pam, go right ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay, good. I had it on mute. I just unmuted it. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, hi, Gerard. How are you doing? Something's been really bothering me, and I just wanted to ask what you think about how I've been thinking about this situation with – I'm going to quick go here. I was doing something with my notes here. What did I do with that? Wait, I'm just trying to bring up my notes here. Okay, I guess as you know, I'm the one who had left the country to protect my son, but it seems to me that these so-called judges, you know, that are, who are not protecting children, even no matter how terrible the evidence is that these children are being abused and sexually abused, they're still giving custody to the pedophile fathers. Or, you know, and sometimes it's even if the mother's abusive, these mothers, you know, abusive mother will get custody. Whoever's the abusive one will get the custody. And also these...
nobody has the power to take children away from their parents except a jury. You know, look at if there's some abuse there, then they got to be brought to trial, and the trial jury's got to discuss discover what the problem is and try to figure out an answer. This is a people problem. It's not a judge problem. These judges don't have the authority, nor do they don't have compassion anyway. They're all criminals, so, I mean, why?
No, I know. And that's the way, that's the way what they're doing. And also, they're kidnapping children from good families and putting them to foster care, where 70% of them are drugged and many are adopted out, all for huge profits. Now, my thinking is, you know, these judges, as I believe these are actually war tactics being used to weaken and destroy future generations. You know, I think that's what's really going on.
Chaos is the key to what these people really are all about. And, yeah, any destruction, any problems... look, they create problems with everything. They create problems with the medical fields, the pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
They create problems with the food, you know, the GMOs. They create problems with everything, the court system. Nothing works. It's a whole mess. And yeah, they're destroying America. They've been doing this for a long time. And again, that's why we're here, to try to turn this thing around.
Well, I know. But it seems to me, what I'm trying to get at is, it seems to me like these so-called judges are actually terrorists. I mean, they're nothing less than terrorists.
I think you could have them defined as terrorists, absolutely. You know, they terrorize people all the time. They get these people, they bring them up for charges. They know most of the time these people aren't even guilty of anything. And they put 50 years or 30 years ahead of them and say, hey, look, we'll work a deal out with you. We'll give you 4 years, sign the paper. Yeah, and look, that's terrorizing people.
How can you offer someone four years
and threaten them with 50 years if they don't sign the papers? I mean, just to begin with. And it's all a sham. I mean, every case I ever see anywhere, it's always a sham. Every single one of them is, they don't seem to be bringing any criminals in, really. You know, they're just bringing in the people who are struggling to get ahead in life. You know?
I know.
But I don't know. There is no answer for that other than what we're doing that I know of, you know?
I know. And these poor children that need to be rescued as soon as possible, I mean, who are living with their pedophile abusers and being abused all the time, they need to be rescued. Somehow, I just hope we can work fast. It's just terrible. And
well, the problem, other than that, is there are a lot of pedophile rings out there that are supplying children to a lot of our elected officials, and the judges are on that list too. Go ahead, Gerard.
Actually, a lot of these pedophiles are breeding their own. These pedophiles know they're breeding their own victims.
Yeah.
You know,
Gerard,
they get them more pregnant.
I think you're going to see big progress with these pedophile rings in the next couple of weeks, because that's what they're working on top. And once that happens, it'll make our job down on the bottom easier. Look at these judges through gradualism. Don't forget, you're dealing with powers and principalities, and each judge doesn't understand the whole picture. He's gotten into it through gradualism, through greed. You know, they have a judges' association. And what happens is the judges belong to these associations, and they teach them these tactics, and they end up having stock in the prisons and in the pedophile rings, in the houses where they send them. They're making money, and the money is rooted. And so gradually they took a little bit, and I don't think they see the big picture, because they're only worried about themselves. And the people that have gotten them into this, they use them to use the goods against them when they need a favor done. You see, these judges have become pedophiles themselves, and so they got the goods on them, so that when a case comes up, this guy knows he's never going to go against whoever has the goods on him. And I think every judge, almost every one of them, like John says, we haven't met any good ones yet. I don't know where they are, but they have the goods on them. They've all been compromised. It's disgusting. And it's almost depressing to even look at the big picture. You got to kind of put your blinders on and pick an area, just like you got a big mess to clean up, like when a house has been burned down and you're going to go in and rehab it. You can't look at the whole thing. You have to take a corner and start in the corner and start cleaning up. And that's what we have to do, because it's a mess. It's a horrible mess. And if you really thought about it, it almost seems too big to fix it, because it's just – it's ridiculous, and it runs so deep, It runs right into the White House. It runs right up. Look at Obama and Hillary were in it. We know they were. We know that whole Lolita Express. They were all doing it. They're all a bunch of pedophiles, all of them. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see them go down, and I would be very glad to see them go down, because if they go down on the top, the guys on the bottom are gonna panic. And then you're going to be able to go in and file paperwork, and they'll be scared, and they'll run like rats from a sinking ship. So that's our hope, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming
close.
It's out there. Look, it's out there now, and people are talking about it. And there's been big changes in the past 6 months. This is becoming more like common knowledge. It was never even whispered before, you know.
I know. If we did talk about it, we were crazy.
Oh yeah, you're a nut. You need a mental institution. That's what the judges would do. They lock you up. You know?
Oh yeah. Then they want to put you on medicine to calm you down so that you could calmly hand your child over to the pedophile.
Yeah, they want to give you a chemical lobotomy so you can't say anything. That's what they want to do.
Yeah, that's what they wanted to do to me, so I could calmly every weekend and twice a week hand my son over to the pedophile. My son to be abused. Don't solve the problem and stop my son from being abused. Just drug me up so I can be a airhead and just calmly hand my son over to be abused. Ooh, I'm mad. I didn't take him. I did not take any of them. I did not want my. I don't like being.
That would be my thing. I wouldn't take him. I wouldn't care. I do like you.
I didn't. Because I knew that wasn't going to solve the legal problems. That was not going to solve any problems.
No, I'm trying to protect. Style.
Yeah.
Look, you die to protect your children, right? People die,
what?
Right?
But the United States, I spent 248 days in jail. Luckily, I was found not guilty. You know, I was lucky. I was just so lucky that Puerto Rico protected my son.
Right.
One of the lucky ones. But I keep on fighting because back there in Lebanon County, Pennsylvania, there's still other children that are forced to go to living with their pedophile fathers. And all over the United States, I keep fighting. It's got to stop. We got to get these children out. You know,
justice is coming. I believe justice is coming one way or the other.
I know. I'm excited about it. I'm really excited. And Judge Deanne Salcido, a retired judge, Deanne Salcido, there is a good judge. She actually retired because of the system, having to hand children over. She had exposed that judges are taught in judge school repeatedly, she said, she was taught and threatened to use practices that protect pedophiles. And she did. But then she realized, later that when she found out the one girl who she forced to go live with the father, you know, she had custody to, later the little girl was still abused for 2 more years and then sexually abused a neighbor girl. That's when she couldn't do it anymore. She realized, you know, but she's going to be on a talk show real soon and exposing more. So I'm looking forward to that. It's Judge Deanne Salcido. So it's within the next month, that should be on YouTube. So that's going to also help. And I'm thinking about that in Lebanon County, there's a small elite club that was secret. So I found out about it and started exposing it in the online newspaper back there, the one called Tokix. There was a small elite club that was a secret club only for the judges and attorneys on only those that they invited. You know, it was secret. And there, I was told by somebody that had gone there, that moved out of the state later, that it was a cult. And there was an initiation to get in. Now, from what I'm learning, I really wonder what that initiation was. I bet it involved children or babies. I just have a feeling.
Justice is coming one way or the other. And, you know, if justice doesn't come through the courts, it'll come through Judgment Day itself. But it's going to come one way or the other. These people are going to have to meet justice and deal with it. But,
yeah.
Okay. We're going to move on to our next call.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Okay. Okay. Thank you. Have a good evening. Bye.
You too. Gerard, you want to take the panel? Don't push the wrong button now.
Okay.
Hit the next question button.
And how about clear the queue? No, I'm only kidding.
You got it. I may pipe in here or there. I don't know, but Ted.
Yeah. Hello, Gerard.
Hey, how you doing, Jim?
Good, good. First of all, I want to wish everybody a happy Memorial Day. Hope everybody had a good time.
Thank you.
I got on kind of late because of my phone, so I don't know if this was brought up, but I wanted to ask John about the case of us versus Mr. Cuomo and his cohorts.
Yeah, that looks like I'm pretty sure it's defaulted. I'm going to work on that tomorrow.
They never answered your answer, right?
They never answered, no. None of them answered.
So, Jim, they sent
it'd be very
us,
interesting
sent
to see how that's going to go now.
They sent us an answer which was like a not answer, and we slapped them back and said, look, first of all, you didn't have to answer that, but you did a knee-jerk answer.
Yeah, but that was before we filed this case, this part of the case. That was towards something else, just an information to governors. But, yeah,
right.
They answered that, the idiots, the way they did. I don't know.
Then you slapped them.
Right.
And then filed more paperwork.
Then we filed the gun case. Or about that time
right.
we filed the after we filed the gun case, and they never responded. Congress didn't respond, governor didn't respond. They defaulted.
Well, the attorney general he's going to respond for everybody. But anyway,
okay. Well, tomorrow is my last day to work every day, so I'm going to be retired, and I wanted to take on this cause here in New York State because I'm a member of the of SCOPE. I know you've heard of them.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to bring this to them so that we could form some kind of a
let's get together in lieu
of next January 31st when everybody's supposed to, because everybody's getting nervous. They don't know what to do, and it's 6 months away. 7 months that they're going to have to either recertify or take their pistols and give them to an FFL to hold on to, or everybody's worried about it. And they all know, so when I heard about coming into default, I'm thinking, well, there's something that we can do with. So we could
absolutely. Look, first of all, we got nullification. If enough people don't obey, then what are they going to do to begin with, okay? They can't put everyone in jail. But look, if you're retiring and you got some time and you want to get involved, let's connect sometime during the week and let's discuss some ideas. We'll see what we could do.
Okay.
Look, at the fact that they didn't answer our gun case should be good enough to hold off that stupid recertification and say, look, until you answer this case, nobody has to do any of that crap because it relates to that, right?
Well, I mean,
we should be able to put them
on hold. I believe it.
There was a wherefore clause. The default is a default, period. And I don't know how this is going to work, but I'll tell you, the judge has got to do the administration of the paperwork on this. And he was also ordered to do the administration of the paperwork on the other default, and he hasn't done that yet. So we have to remind him of that. He's being very quiet. He hasn't responded to anything. And now we're gonna give him another order, and we're going to send this, and we're going to remind him of the other one, and we'll give him maybe 10 days or something to get us the necessary paperwork done and execution of judgment on this. And if he doesn't do that, okay, then we're going to have to do him a show cause, aren't we?
Did they change judges on us, John?
Huh?
I'm sorry, Ken.
Did they change our judge? Remember, we had a constitutional judge, and they changed him, right?
The first judge, this guy's supposed to be a guy who studied the Constitution, I think. Look, the first judge, remember, we got was the one that Schultz knew that he had, okay? And then they changed it from him to another judge after that. That judge is still the same judge. And that's
right.
The one who's supposed to be going around talking about the Constitution, I believe.
Oh, I thought Schultz's judge was the one.
Well, this guy is something else also. I forget what it was, but he seemed to be a good man. Matter of fact, he's a magistrate, period. He's not a magistrate judge. He's just a magistrate.
Mm. Well, he knows how to keep his mouth shut anyway.
He's good at that so far.
Well, if he doesn't...
So we'll see what happens.
If he doesn't do what he's supposed to do...
We're going to go talk to Sessions again. And the president.
Until they're sick of hearing from us. How about we move it to a circuit court,
though? No, we control the court. We're not going to give
right.
control.
Well,
of the
court, just to get the issue.
No. What we're going to do? Look at we'll even go to the Supreme Court again, and
we're in the third
the United States Supreme Court.
Well, I'm not going to the. I don't want to go to the circuit court for that. I want to go for an injunction against this thing that's coming up here in next January.
Well, exactly. Well, let's see we'll create a strategy, of course. But first,
right.
let's see what's going to happen in the next course of the next, I don't know, 30 days. We got to start a process here.
Yeah, we can't wait on this any longer. They're having a board meeting in like the third week in July, and I want to be well
Who's
prepared
that?
Before that.
Who's having a board meeting?
Scope.
The scope, you know.
Well, look at the answer is simple. The answer is simple. Nullification. Nullify it.
Well, the answer is simple, but a lot of these guys are what you would call your law and order guys, you know. They're in the
fire
department. They're all of that.
Look at we all are, but to get to the point that we can't give up our guns, period. The Second Amendment, unalienable right protected by the Second Amendment. And the sheriff should know that. The sheriff should be on our side. And if all the people just nullify it, just say no, what are they going to do?
Well, right now, they got enough people to nullify the law because nobody complied with the registration of the assault rifles. They know that there's, I don't know how many million of them out there that they know about, much plus the ones they don't know about, who have not registered them. So that alone right there proves that the people have spoken and they can put a bill in for nullification. Look at New Hampshire nullified inspections in the state due to non-compliance. When you have a law that nobody's complying with and you can prove that there's I don't know what the magic number is, what the percentage is before it can be nullified, but that's what they did in New Hampshire. They could prove that X many people were not getting their cars inspected, and so then they had to strike down the inspection law in the state. Well, if you can do it with an inspection law, you certainly could do it with a gun law. So they already know that they got less than a 2%, I think it's 2% or 3% compliance rate with the registration of the so-called, quote-unquote, assault rifles. That alone should take out the New York Safe Act right there just on noncompliance, because we are not complying, are we?
And don't forget, the president claims to be a Second Amendment president. He made a big thing about that. And we're going to be talking to him about that concerning this particular default. He's going to be very much aware of it.
Look, they're so dysfunctional. When we were going to the meetings over there in Catskill about this SAFE Act, and the sheriff came up there and they were talking, they said, oh, well, the Sixth Circuit over there, over by Buffalo, declared the magazine ban unconstitutional. So now they're taking the law apart and they're picking pieces out. And they're saying, and so they said, over there you can put more bullets in your gun, but you can't do that here. I said, do you realize how ridiculous you sound? How could something be unconstitutional in one county and then you move to this county and you're going to uphold it? I said, let me tell you something. If it's unconstitutional over there and you enforce it over here, expect to see yourself sitting in jail, because I, for one, am going to make sure that you're prosecuted for holding up an unconstitutional law under the color of law. I mean, this was the deputy sheriff talking. He doesn't even understand. You can't have a law be constitutional and unconstitutional based on the county that you're in. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, and the rules of jurisprudence clearly state that if a part of the law is found unconstitutional, the whole law is then unconstitutional.
And they never do that. Oh, they're just going to fix it. Oh, we're going to repeal that section and replace it with this section. They're just constantly working on it.
Yeah,
I don't know what happens. Huh?
Anyway.
Well, these paperwork that – this is stuff that we should be pushing through the courts. It needs to be – look, it should have been nullified already, right? It's unconstitutional. We understand that. If just the sheriffs would understand it and say, okay, I'm not going to enforce, well, this sheriff over here claims to be pretty constitutional, a constitutional sheriff. He's getting awards and stuff. But he's saying, I'm not going to enforce it unless he sees something. Like if he gets called in on a domestic and he sees an assault rifle sitting on your table, then he'll enforce it. Well, guess what? That's not constitutional. Just because he's not actively searching for these guns, he can't arrest anybody under the SAFE Act and think that he's going to be safe. I hope he's listening tonight, because I for one, will hold his feet to the fire all the time with that. You look at it's either it's like you can't say it's a little. I'm a little pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not. That's it. There's no middle ground here. And that's the problem. They always want to discuss things. Step into my parlor, said the spider to the fly. Well, it is the meaning of is. Bull crap. It's either constitutional or it's unconstitutional. And we know what it is. It's unconstitutional. There's no doubt in my mind. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, they haven't come house. But if they come house, make a revolution, because that's when people will start shooting at them. But the trouble is they know better than to do that. What they do is they wait and they look for other things, and they catch you going in and out, or they happen to come in the house for something else, and they find it, and they take people out one person at a time. They'll never go door-to-door collecting these things, because they know that they'll create a war. So what they're going to do is they're going to do it covertly, little by little. You know what I mean? They go around the horn. They look at the ammo you're buying, and they restrict the ammo, and maybe they'll even investigate based on the ammo you're buying. I don't know. They haven't gotten there yet, but I could see all kinds of schemes of how they'll flush people out eventually, you know, if we don't squash this law.
Well, our esteemed governor has given us another little jewel, a nugget of jewelry that we can work with, you know, to kind of coalesce the people again, you know, like when the SAFE Act was jammed down our throats on the first one. It got, you know, we went down there and came down to the Capitol, and we literally destroyed their $30,000 lawn out there. You know, they weren't happy about that. And, but now we got it again, you know, we got to be able to come around this again. And of course, then they have this SAFE Act 2 coming through here with the micro stamping and the $1 million insurance policy.
So we got to
stay on this. I want to take on the position of a state coordinator and get with the other four gentlemen there and get this thing going throughout the state. So plan on hearing from me this week then.
Well,
get in touch with us and let us talk about it. But bear in mind, look, if you can get the Scope and these other gun groups together and let us come out and talk to them, let us bring the paperwork, let us show them, look, we're going to file for the default. And once we file for that default, I mean, right there is something that they can be walking around with.
Well, that's the thing. We need to get that one. We need to get the somebody's signature, you know, whoever, on that dotted line that says that gives it the full faith
and credit of the court that says that they defaulted. The normal process for filing a default is to take it to the clerk and have the process. It's a process. That's all it is. In this case, because we're doing it as the grand jury, as the people, as we the people, okay, coming into the court and writing the papers and bringing them through, because it's going that way, we're expecting and we're going to demand and command that the magistrate do the administrative work of this paperwork, period. We're not looking for a clerk to do it. We're looking for the magistrate of the court. And that's what we're going to push for. And once we get that, and if he doesn't do it, we're going to do a show cause. And then he stands also in into conspiracy. If he doesn't comply and do the right thing, he becomes part of the conspiracy. And we'll eventually indict him. He'll go onto our list for indictments. And again, we'll bring this to Sessions. We'll bring it to the president. What are you guys going to do about this? You know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
And what about having a private attorney general?
Throughout handle this.
You still got to get the court's permission for that. That's the problem. They got to accept your private attorney general. Yes. There's procedures for that. And look, Trump could do that. Trump could put somebody in and say they're a private attorney general and they have the authority. I mean, there is a procedure for making a private attorney general, and any judge can do it. Find a judge. You become a private attorney general, I'll vote for you. No, there's no voting. He just has to proclaim it and sign the papers, and you take the oath. And most of the time, they do it on a case by case basis. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In other words, you're a private attorney general for the purposes of the SAFE Act. You know. But okay. Technically, I think once you're a private attorney general, if somebody brings you something else, you can go. You can run with it just like a grand jury can. You know, there's a lot more power there than they want to admit. That's why they don't want to do it. They know. They don't like runaway grand juries, and they don't like runaway private attorney generals either. You know?
Yeah, well, that's...
But
that's
I don't know expected. If you could find somebody that would give you that would give some, you know, anybody those qualifications. I mean, it's up to a judge to do it. You know, maybe find some judge that's ready to retire and got one foot in the grave and the other one on a banana peel, and maybe he'll do it. You know?
It's tough to find one that probably doesn't have anything, you know, any bones in the closet somewhere, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, unless you find somebody that found their conscience and they want to make good before they leave this earth. You know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but, you know, you hope against hope. God provides, you know. I don't know. Something's got to break loose, but I don't know. You know, and then there's the civil disobedient thing, but then you take a chance on getting arrested, you know. If everybody showed up at the Capitol with their assault rifles on their back and said, we're not going to comply, what do you think's going to happen with that, you know?
Well, I've heard all kinds of stories like, you know, put them in a safe deposit box under someone else's name, and you know, but that's all just trying to do something that's not right anyway, because the Second Amendment says the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. So the whole thing is just hokey. It's just we need to have this Second Amendment showdown.
Tell me you're going to bring your gun to a federal institution bank and stick your gun in there? You talk about going to jail.
Well, whatever it may be, you know. I mean, that's not the only place that you can find someplace.
I wouldn't put them in a safe deposit box.
But the fact is people are at their wits.
I put them in a safe deposit box. Jeez. But anyway.
You know, these people are at their wits' end, and, you know, the last thing they want to do is go register with the state. They didn't really want to do it with the county, but under the sheriff there, you know, you're talking 30, 40 years ago, it wasn't that big a deal.
You know, look, I don't know what the answer is. The answer is to get rid of it. But you can get your 35-state permit, and if you have somebody in another state, and you can just get rid of the gun in another state and say, I'm carrying it on my Florida permit, and it's in Florida, and don't tell them. And you could bury it out back. If they want to come look for it, that's another, you know, problem. But, I mean, there's all kinds of creative ways of getting that pistol out of the New York State pistol permit system, you know?
Yeah, I know, and I don't particularly want to enter into talking about that. I just assume get it, you know, get it done once and for all. Well, of course, it's never for all because, you know, they'll just come around a couple of years later, change a few words, pass it again. So, you know, the whole idea is that, you know, the people that we deal with are not into this civil disobedience type thing. They're not, you know, they want to come to the meeting and they want everything to be rosy, and but they don't want to put their, you know, their life, their liberty, their sacred honor on the ground. They want it to be done. You know, snap my finger.
Let posterity forget that ye were countrymen of ours.
Yes, I know.
What can I tell you? No, I don't know.
I got up at the last meeting when someone had brought up about it, you know, that to remind people to recertify their guns, and I said, or you have the right to remain silent.
If you give up the right to remain silent and fill out that license, anything you say can and will be used against you in court of law.
Well, but you got it. You got a pistol permit. They know you got it. They're going to be coming knocking at your door. How could you remain silent?
Well, then you can take give them to an FFL to hold on to it until this case is adjudicated.
Yeah, but if you give it to an FFL, you're going to have to tell them that you gave it to an FFL.
I understand that. But at least that's what you're legally doing so that you don't possess it. I understand it, but it's a form of civil disobedience.
First of all, I think one of the things that we should be doing is we should be prosecuting Cuomo for treason. I think we should be hanging Cuomo in the public square, and that would fix it right there. I think that he needs to go to jail. I think, look, he passed this thing under a necessity thing, under darkness and all this other crap. He really needs to be prosecuted for this. He took our gun rights away unconstitutionally. What more do you want to know? I mean, look, we need to tar and feather his butt.
Well, we basically are prosecuting him. Just don't have any.
He needs to go behind bars.
Right.
And if that doesn't happen, then they're like, it's like there is no justice because he's the cause of this. You know? I mean, I know he's working for other people, and I know Obama probably coerced him into doing it. You know, but that doesn't matter. He's the tool, and so we need to cut off his handle. But anyway, that's another discussion. We'll have to get together and discuss that. But he really, you know, look at when this goes through, he's got to have skin in the game so that there's consequences for him for signing this bill in the first place. And every congressman, every New York State congressman and senator that voted for it, they also should suffer something because they all committed treason by doing it. And that's my feeling. They're not protected. They have no immunities. We put them there to protect our rights. And what did they do? They sold out.
Yes. So, and then I kind of wanted John to talk about that affidavit that he was discussing last week. I don't know if he brought that up earlier.
No, the affidavit in the counties about the sheriff?
No, I mean about basically on people that have been wronged, you know, that have had crimes committed against them. You know, that John wants for the case. This affidavit at NLA.org.
In other words, what we want to do, and we're going to discuss that too, I don't know exactly how we're going to do it. I discussed it with John earlier, as far as being able to attach your case to the our case, the big case, the case to end all cases, so to speak, to put your case in that and say, okay, I get an injunction and you can't rule on mine until you rule on theirs because theirs affects mine. It's a constitutional issue. And you can attach to our case because when our case gets decided, then your case is moot, basically is what it is, right?
Yeah, it's the Joe Bruno defense.
Is that what it was, the Drew Bruno defense?
Yeah, he was convicted, but then they ruled it unconstitutional. They were discussing it at the Supreme Court level, so he asked to get let out of jail until they decided it, and then I'm not really sure what happened then because it falls out of the, you know, the public's eye. But
I remember that.
Yeah.
He did get away, though, I think, ultimately.
Yeah, I think they did declare it unconstitutional, so then his conviction was moot.
Yep, exactly.
Which is what we're looking for here. So we'll ask for the Joe Bruno, Joe's Bill, that's what we'll call it.
Joe's Bill.
they seem to name him after, you know,
yeah,
the dog gets
right.
run over by a car. It's, you know, it's so-and-so's Bill. Now if you run over a dog.
Right.
Not taking light of people running over dogs or nothing, but it does happen, you know.
I know.
So anyway, I would also like to do something with our esteemed politicians about holding their feet to the fire on a local level. not even local, I mean, but statewide level, but I mean with local people, our county organizers, with these affidavits. I would think that people should be able to get notarized affidavits that we can work on our senators and our assemblymen, either on a statewide level or even down in D.C., so that if we have enough people that file affidavits that they're doing stuff that that the people deem is unconstitutional, then we act on it. Like if I had a grand jury to go to, that's what I would schedule a 10-15 appointment and go down there and say, Senator Snort here is, you know, is trampling on my Second Amendment rights, and I want to know what you're going to do about it. So that's what I want to do, is coalesce a bunch of affidavits on all kinds of stuff. We need to hit them from like five different fronts. So this way, if one doesn't work, the other one will. You know, we got to keep puncturing the balloon from many different locations.
You know, we have one or two sheriffs in New York State that said they're not going to enforce the SAFE Act in their county.
Well, that's just fantastic, but, you know, we still have,
of course,
oh, I don't know how many counties.
If you're not living in their county or you want to leave the county, that doesn't help you. You can't,
right.
You can't take the sheriff with you, you know what I mean?
But, well, you know, then, you know, come next week or next year when they want to do something like this with the SAFE Act and stuff, it'll be big news. So what we need to do is hop on it and have scope throughout the state, be aware of all of this, and then make us aware of it so that we can do a show cause on these unlawful infringements on our rights. Even though, you know, after the 31st. So if they go in there looking for whatever and they find this gun and they want to arrest them on that and make a case for it, then guess what? We're there right with you. So
well,
and then that's just like we're doing with the mortgage foreclosures. Then we can show that there's a conspiracy across the counties, you know, to violate the Second Amendment. So this way it goes better that we can get the whole thing struck down if we do our homework on a countywide level. We have all these county organizers or administrators, you know, organizers, administrators that are just, they're really not doing what they could do. So we got to talk this week, because I got ideas floating in my upstairs and they need to be cemented down.
Hey, do you know whatever happened with the state police taking the system over? What are they doing? Just sending the state police information right now? Because I had heard that they weren't going to take it completely away from the sheriffs, which was the original plan, that the state police would hold the pistol permits and the information. What are they doing, just taking the sheriff's information now and starting a database up or something? If the state police didn't get all the information from the sheriff, if the sheriff refuses to turn the information over to the state police, right? That at least, you know, in that county, the state police don't have the information of who's got the pistol permits. It's just something to think about.
Well, I think what it's going to find out is, like you said, they're not going to go door to door, and I don't believe they're going to do anything with anybody. But when there is a domestic incident, when there's an issue that comes up, then it'll just be one more thing that they can hold over their head.
Well, look, if you get a call on your property and they know that you're a pistol permit holder, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to come in with a freaking SWAT team. That's what they're going to do. And they're going to say, well, you're a known gun guy. And we know you got an unregistered gun, right?
Well, the fact is that they don't know. You could have gotten rid of it 2 days prior to that because you thought that this was all coming down. And you said, that's it. I just, you know. So you take it down to an FFL and you say, listen, I don't want this gun anymore. I want to sell it. I'd rather have the cash rather than have them confiscate it. You know?
Yeah, but
when
you do that.
Let's say things are getting hot at home. My wife's talking to a lawyer about divorce or whatever. And so I know that this is coming down. So here, take these guns, take them all and put them up for sale. You have them. They're in safekeeping. Give me a receipt for them. And then when they come down there, they don't have to worry about, you know, you can say, no, I gave them. Get so-and-so on the phone here. He'll vouch for me. You know? I mean, there's a way to... I mean, I realize you're giving up your right to own a pistol, but face it, if they're coming in with military-type armor, you're not really armed to the teeth as much as you may think to take them out. So that's just stupid. I mean, you know, there's just no, and nobody really wants that anyway. They're only doing it because some rabid raccoon is on there beating up on their dog or something, you know, and they want to take care of it, you know. Most people are. I mean,
well, it's a concealed carry, and it's for self-defense, and that's, you know, look at, let's face it. I mean, you know, rabid raccoons
talking
take
most
care
people.
Of them. Yeah, well, and look at the Afghanis took the Russian out with their tanks out with Molotov cocktails and rocks in the tracks. So look at, use your imagination. I don't care what they got. If the people are against them, they got problems because they can't even stop to go take a pee on a tree without somebody shooting a rock at them from a slingshot or something. Their lives would be very uncomfortable. Look, they don't want war with we the people because we outnumber them 800 to 1. So if we really put our minds to fighting them, they'd be done, is the long and the short of it. And this is the kind of talk that scares them when you talk like this, because now you're realizing that we're stronger than they are. You know, and you're right. They're not going to come in and burn houses down because that's going to defeat the purpose of what they're looking to do, you know. You know, if everybody had the cayunas to stand up to them, this thing would be over tomorrow. If we all got together, and said, here we are. Huh?
I think if anybody had the cayunas to do this, then this group that I'm a part of, I think that in their heart of hearts, they really just want to be left alone. So there's just no reason for it. There isn't anybody that really wholeheartedly believes in it, unless the totally ignorant. I mean, they can understand what they're trying to do, but it's just like throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
So anyway, well, so do you want to make a schedule we can get together this week, or?
Well,
you got my email address. Yeah, except for tomorrow.
I do believe it. Yeah, well, during the week, I never know what I'm doing. I'm working, basically. And sometimes I have time and sometimes I don't. But, you know, in the evenings, if it's not a Monday evening or like a Thursday evening, I'm probably open for any evening. So we could get on the phone. I also have this fellow Harley here living next door who's very good at getting stuff out as far as, you know, the internet goes. And, you know, like he'll blast something out and he hits 300,000-500,000 people. He's good with stuff like that. So we could utilize, you know, if you think there's something that we should get out there. I don't know. We'll talk.
You know, first things first, we need this cease and desist order or whatever, the wherefore clause enforced, the default, whatever it's called. We need that on there because then I can go to this, you know, I can't just say, well, when the judge signs it, they'll just say, well, when the judge does sign it, let us know. Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Because
without
the signature of the magistrate, we don't have the teeth, you know. They're probably listening right now and they just know that. But in that case, they'll go to plan two, you know, and then maybe plan three is that we do show causes on everybody that gets arrested under this recertification thing. We should be doing any one of those anyway. Absolutely anything to do with a gun charge, at least in New York, because it has to do with Mr. Cuomo. And then that offsets him trying to take the place of Mr. Trump coming up here at the next election, because, you know, that's his plan. It's got to be. I mean, he's running so fast, if you look at him, you can barely see his feet moving.
Yeah.
You know? It's kind of like a fan on high speed.
Think about it. Like John said, if they defaulted, which they did, that means they lost the case. Right?
Right.
That means they agree to everything we put in our wherefore clause, right? And technically...
Apparently so.
And technically, we don't need the judge. The clerk can do it. But John doesn't want the clerk to do it because, you know, they'll say, oh, well, she didn't have the authority. We want the judge to do it. But you see, at that point there, we don't care what judge does it. That's something we can march with, the default. Sign the default. Sign the default. By signing the default, guess what? The SAFE Act is over, isn't it? You don't need to do anything more. You don't have to, huh?
like you say, one judge with his foot out the door saying, you know what, I've had enough of this. You know, you guys took my profession that I started in 40 years ago and you just bastardized it to the point now where I can't even stand it no more.
Well, wait a minute. How are they going to get around the default? You put paperwork in, you pay $410, you put paperwork in, they don't answer you, they default. And there's plenty of Supreme Court rulings that says that the state cannot default, that they need to be on their toes more than the people do, because that makes lawlessness. If the state doesn't have to obey the law, then the people certainly don't, right? We got all kinds of Supreme Court rulings that we put in our cases, and I remember them. I can see them in my mind's eye. The state not allowed to default. And when they do, they're held to a higher standard than the people. So they defaulted. They're done. So what's to discuss? There's nothing to discuss, is there?
Of course, well, the fact is the
say,
the,
well, I have the authority on a big case like this because it shouldn't have defaulted, and we had a really good reason because the judge was drunk, and I'm going to go back through and I'm going to dismiss it. That's what they'll do.
Well, as what Brent says, you know, I don't know if he did say this exactly, but we have basically outcome-based government. So it's not how we get there or whether we defaulted or whatever. And the outcome is what matters. And right now the outcome
they're
going
to do what Teresi did to us. And Teresi said, yes, that the Department of, Board of Elections defaulted.
Oh, the Board of Elections, EOL.
You get everything, though, except for... The law says that I can go back in the case, and if I determine that you weren't going to win to begin with, I can dismiss it. And that's what he said. I determined that you had no chance of winning it to begin with, so I'm dismissing it. And that's what they're going to pull. Because they're going to get a judge. They'll get Treacy to do it. He already knows us. Right?
Well, in that case, then I guess... I don't see how they can go. I just don't understand how they can go against this Second Amendment and then not worry about the other ones. You know, I mean, just this weekend, we had this Fourth Amendment suspension celebration in New York where they were just going to go pulling people over for not wearing their seatbelts. You know, there's no affidavit on that. I mean, I realize it's just a moneymaker for them. You know, to pay for all the troopers that they're having out there this weekend. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they're trying to do. It just builds contempt for law and order anyway.
They weren't going to just pull people over for a seatbelt. They were just going to pull people over and check them. They were going to do Nazi Germany-style traffic stops. Which, if they happen to catch you without a seatbelt on, then they'd write you up. But that whole stop is unconstitutional because there's no probable cause to be pulling you over. We don't have. We're not supposed to have checkpoints in this country.
Yep, or dragnets.
Yeah, even the DWI checks are illegal. I don't care what the judges said about them; they're illegal.
Yeah,
it's not an excuse so that you can get a DWI bus to pull everybody over as they're coming home. You know.
I know you're supposed to be safe within your papers and effects, and my car is my effect. It wouldn't be there if I wasn't in the car.
Right.
So. I get it. I mean, it's just getting it. I just don't think that people really, I think most of the time they go, well, you know, you shouldn't be driving drunk anyway. It's not the issue about driving drunk. The whole issue is that they're stopping everybody. If they had a search warrant for every car signed by a judge, that'd be different. With an affidavit, then they would be doing it legally. Then you wouldn't have anything. It's not the fact that you... trying to stop people from driving drunk, that has nothing to do with it. It has to do with the fact that they're just pulling you over or stopping everybody and saying, have you had anything to drink? What business of you? Why are you stopping me?
If they're going to pull you over if you had anything to drink and you didn't have anything to drink and they see something else, they shouldn't be able to go after anything because if you had a search warrant, you're only allowed to search for those things, right?
Right. And the places
that would
be
the
seized.
That would be fruits of the poison tree if they found something else on a legal stop even, right?
Yeah.
So.
But with outcome-based, with this outcome-based jurisdiction or adjudication, then That's it. The outcome is we want the $5,000. It used to be $500. Now it's $5,000. I can imagine someday it's going to be like $25,000 for.
It's actually more than that because by the time you get done going to school and all the other crap and the insurance, your insurance rates going up and everything else, it probably is $25,000. It might be $5,000 to get out of the court, but by the time you get done going to the classes and your license and all that other stuff, it's more money than that.
The $5,000 is the lawyer fee. That's all that is. The lawyer and the court costs. That's it.
Okay. Well, we'll talk again. I'll let you move on.
Yeah, well, look, it's after 12, so I'm going to close it down. Thank you very much, and we'll get together. Give me a call, or I'll call you. You got my number, too, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, I got your number. I got all your numbers.
Okay. You got my number.
All right, George.
Okay.
Thanks a million. All right.
Thanks, everybody. It's 12:06. I'm going to shut her down because I'm going to fall asleep here. Anyway, thanks for coming, and it's been good, and we'll do it again next week. Thanks.